Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
9 p.m., and we play the entire Tom Hartman Show 9 to midnight, Monday through Friday, with the exception of Thursday, when we start Tom Hartman Show at 11 in the evening and run it through 2 in the morning. Thank you so much for listening to KRXA 540 and on the internet at KRXA540.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. 70,000 layoffs across an assortment of American and European companies were announced today, affecting workers around the world. Among them, 20,000 at Caterpillar, 2% of their workforce, 8,000 at Sprint, 1,800 at Texas Instruments, another 2,000 at GM. CBS's Anthony Mason says this is a global recession.
We are basically now at a pace, and have been for some months, of 500,000 job cuts every month, and we will probably be at that level, you know, through April, May, maybe a little longer. The real wild card here is going to be the stimulus package. How quickly is it passed? How effective is it?
Wall Street seemed to have factored it in already. The Dow was up 38 points. NASDAQ gained a dozen. Oil prices were down about 75 cents to less than $46 a barrel. Treasury Secretary nominee Timothy Geithner is expected to survive, to be confirmed, despite not paying some of his taxes for 3 years straight, and he'd be in charge of the IRS. Debate in the Senate today.
I don't believe Mr. Geithner has been remotely candid about his tax issues.
Restoring our economy is our defining challenge. And Tim Geithner, I believe, is the right person to begin this effort.
Republican James Inhofe of Oklahoma and Democrat Christopher Dodd of Connecticut, the confirmation vote has just begun. The first day of the impeachment trial of Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich was today in Springfield.
The governor or his counsel has the right to conduct a cross-examination of the witness. However, as neither the governor nor counsel on his behalf have appeared, there can be no cross-examination.
That's the state's Chief Justice, Thomas Fitzgerald. Blagojevich didn't appear, saying it's a show trial, the outcome set before it started. California can expect to be allowed to set its own auto emission standards independently, which means they'll set yours, too. President Obama said as much, and that puts California in the driver's seat because it's a car market that cannot be ignored.
The automobile industry fought this tooth and nail, and for years Washington blocked us from implementing this. But we never gave up.
Governor Schwarzenegger. The president also wants new fuel mileage standards set for 2011 cars and trucks. President Obama is sending his special envoy to the Middle East, George Mitchell, tonight to start his work.
When I say progress, not just photo ops, but progress that is concretely felt by people on the ground.
First stop, Egypt. The horse racing world is really looking forward to watching Nicanor run. He is the full brother of the 2006 Kentucky Derby winner Barbaro, a great horse whose potential was unmet by that disastrous leg break at the Preakness. Nicanor will race either this coming weekend at Gulfstream Park, on dirt or on grass the following weekend. This is the Chinese Year of the Ox. As an Earth year, we're told, ox should portend a calmer, less frenetic year for the world. Hear, hear. This is CBS News.
Individual results may vary. Program not available in all states. See contract for complete terms.
If you're tired of credit card debt with high rates and fees, if you're in over your head dealing with high monthly payments, there's powerful information that credit card companies don't want you to know. If you have more than $10,000 in credit card debt, you have the power to settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe. That's bad news for credit card companies, but it's great news for you. We're Credit Answers, and we'd like to offer you free information that will show you how to settle your credit card debt with low monthly payments you can afford. It's yours free by calling 1-800-400-4970. You don't have to declare bankruptcy. Credit Answers represents the highest standards in the industry. We've already helped thousands of people like you save millions of dollars. Just give us 10 minutes and learn how we can help you live better, debt-free. Call for this valuable free information at 1-800-400-4970. That's 1-800-400-4970. 1-800-400-4970.
Now the FAA may put new radar in some of the big city airports that might be able to see birds before they see the jet engine blenders.
It's being tested right now at Seattle-Tacoma Airport, an experimental radar system designed to spot bird flocks as far as 6 miles away.
It is working. We've actually been pretty impressed with it at this point, and now the experiment is actually going to be spread out to other airports throughout the country this year.
Harry Cooper at SeaTac. It's the kind of thing that might have enabled Flight 1549 to avoid that large flock of birds reportedly encountered after takeoff.
If they're talking about a situation where you had a flock of birds, that's really the ideal that this would hopefully detect.
The new radar is coming to Chicago O'Hare, Dallas-Fort Worth, and JFK. Jim Taylor, CBS News.
Nashville, Tennessee, a woman found an interesting painting in one of the bins at the Goodwill Charity Warehouse, a watercolor depicting a wooden ship at an Italian port by Ellsworth Woodward, roughly 100 years old. Sold yesterday for more than $8,000. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
So my little brother, who runs his own business, tells me, the holy grail in business is your customer's email. So I'm like, okay, but how can you, Mr. No Creative Bone in Your Body, do something snazzy like email marketing? And he goes, ConstantContact.com. You know, if I'd have known he'd be this successful, I totally would have given him the top bunk.
ConstantContact.com. Email marketing with tons of easy-to-use, professional-looking templates so you can be as creative as you want. Get a free 60-day trial and free live phone support at ConstantContact.com.
People are feeling it a little more these days. The owls are getting a little more owier, and the uggs are getting just a little uglier. Shoulders and necks are tighter, and when you exercise to work it all out, the soreness can linger. Tiger Balm feels your pain. Stress can make you ache and ugh. Tiger Balm patches and ointments work fast, and they're the powerful way to conquer pain, no matter where it comes from. Go from ow to ah with Tiger Balm. Works where it hurts. Available everywhere.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B. And be part of Peter B.'s America.
Hey, I know.
Welcome to this fresh edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. We've got a lot of talking to do, a lot of important things to talk about today. I'm glad you joined us.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying.
We'll go live to Gaza in just a moment. And talk again with Dr. Sonia Robbins. Later this hour, Tom Cackett from California's Air Resources Board, the team that's implementing the global warming climate change legislation. We'll talk about the new administration's new take on an EPA exemption for California. We'll tell you about that a little bit later. And then Larry Mischel from the Economic Policy Institute will give us a comparison of the tax cuts that John Boehner wants to stimulate the economy and other types of spending that do far more to flow through and get things pumped up again. Next hour, we're going to comment and analyze Barack Obama's inauguration speech. Jeffrey Feldman, the author of the book Framing the Debate. He's looked at presidential inaugural addresses of the past, and he's got some fascinating commentary to offer. That's coming up next hour. And then we'll go to Chicago for Comic Politics. Dick Kay, veteran political reporter, will update us on the saga of Rod Blagojevich, who appears to be playing hooky from his own impeachment proceedings. That's all ahead here on the Peter B. Collins Show. I got a little bit of a cold, but don't worry. Call me. Talk to me. I'm just the same old guy. 888-5. Peter B. is our toll-free number. 888-573-8372. Dr. Sonia Robbins talked to us about 3 weeks or a month ago when she was attempting to enter Gaza from the Egyptian border. She also was a passenger on one of the Free Gaza boats that was turned back as it attempted to cross from Gaza, from Cyprus to Gaza City. And she is now in Gaza, where she is applying her medical skills to the wounded population there. Dr. Sonia, thank you for staying up late to talk with us, and thank you for the work that you're doing in Gaza.
Okay, good morning.
So let me just ask you for your observations. How long have you been in the occupied Gaza Strip, and what have you seen from the 22 days of Israeli military action?
Well, we finally crossed through from Rafah, I think it was Monday morning, after some bureaucratic problems, etc., at getting paperwork that the Egyptians required at the border.
Mm-hmm.
And we took one of the ambulances that was taking patients out from Gaza into Egypt. And when they go back empty, a number of the doctors were able to take safe transport.
Mm-hmm.
The Israelis had withdrawn on that day, or at least saying that they were withdrawing, and we had a fairly safe traffic through. Mm-hmm. Slow, because the roads had been damaged, but we got through to Gaza City directly.
And moving north from Rafah, if you could just give us a sense, was the devastation in terms of buildings that have been reduced to rubble and the ground opened up to try to reveal the tunnels that Hamas has built in many places, was the devastation fairly equally distributed, or did you find it in pockets?
I think it's difficult to say. We've been through to some of the areas since. But certainly wherever you go, there will be either some damaged house block completely demolished, or you will find other evidence of, as you said, the craters in the south.
Mm-hmm.
It's all over. I don't know that there's any particular concentration. I wouldn't be able to say.
Yes.
But certainly wherever you look, there is some destruction of some kind, or the trees, etc., have been ravaged as well by the tanks coming through.
Now, in 22 days of very aggressive military action, including F-16 fighter bombers, the use of white phosphorus, not only to illuminate the sky, but also as a weapon, it caused fires on the ground, including on the final day of hostilities when Israel attacked a school. And that school burned to the ground with repeated ignition from the embers of a white phosphorus device. Mm. Tell me what kinds of injuries are presenting at the hospital facility where you've been working.
Well, from the white phosphorus point of view, they've burned basically on the skin from contact, presumably with the phosphorus itself. But we're still seeing, we were at a playground today where there's still evidence of the debris in the ground and around, and they will ignite spontaneously when you, if you like, irritate them or step on them, or the children try and play with them.
Mm-hmm.
And they will ignite. And they, as far as the children are concerned, this is a game. But this will remain on the ground for as long as the actual elements are still there. Uh-huh. So it'll be a danger, continuing danger. And people get burns from it. Some of them are superficial, but at the same time, the phosphorus itself will act as a chemical burn and eat through fairly deeply into the tissue and require surgery for that.
And what about cluster bombs? Are you aware of cluster bombs having been used, and are there remaining little bomblets from this huge bomb that throws off other little explosive charges?
It's not clear at the moment exactly what's been used. Certainly there are some burns of the deep chemical burns. There are other burns that the burn surgeon describes that come in, the patients come in with a smallish burn that seems to extend and get worse rather than in a way that he's not seen before from some of these injuries.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly. And there are other patients in other departments, particularly general surgery, for example, where patients require two or three laparotomies, which is an exploration of the abdomen by experienced surgeons, and they deal with an initial problem, which may be a shrapnel or evidence of a hole in the intestine, for example. And a number of the doctors have reported that these patients require a second and third look because they become unwell in a way that it doesn't fit with the usual injuries.
I see.
And doesn't fit with their experience, and the patients become very sick instead of getting better.
We're talking with Dr. Sonia Robbins live from Gaza, where it's a little after 1 o'clock in the morning. Dr. Robbins, over the weekend, I received a very disturbing report. It comes from a very reliable source, Barbara Lubin, a Jewish-American woman who is the leader of Middle East Children's Alliance. And her message was relayed to me via Anna Baltzer, a Jewish-American woman who I know and respect, who has been working for peace in the region. And let me just read this paragraph and ask you if you could confirm or speculate on this yourself. It reads, out of all the devastation I've seen so far, there's one story in particular that I think the world needs to hear. I met a mother who was at home with her 10 children when Israeli soldiers entered the house. The soldiers told her she had to choose 5 of her children to give as a gift to Israel. As she screamed in horror, they repeated the demand and told her she could choose or they would choose for her. Then these soldiers murdered 5 of her children in front of her. The concept, and this is commentary, of Jewish morality is truly dead. We can be fascists, terrorists, and Nazis just like everybody else. Now, can you confirm this episode in any way, Dr. Sonia? I have a report from a reliable source, but only one, and I like to be clear about that with my listeners.
The specifics of that particular event, I wouldn't know, but certainly a number of my colleagues who are doctors who have been working either in the peripheral hospitals or now going out to visit relatives and other friends, certainly there are stories coming back of similar kinds of events, of basic inhumane acts, I think you could say, by the soldiers on the ground to the families that they are dealing with. Specifics, I can only quote what colleagues tell me, but these are colleagues who are reliable in that sense, that some things are going on that are not appropriate.
Now, I do want to talk about Palestinian violence in the next segment, but we've got about 2 more minutes here, and I'd just like to ask if there's anything you wish to report of injuries that you've witnessed, stories that have been told directly to you about atrocities committed by the Israelis on Palestinian civilians.
I think there's no doubt that these are unconventional weapons that are not supposed to be used in civilian populations. It's a question to my mind that they should be used at all. But they are allowed in the terminology, at least, of other countries if you are under a significant attack. The problem is that the attack that in any sense you can describe as coming back from the Palestinians are, in my opinion, still fireworks. That's the only description really that fits with the rockets that they make in their own defense. I think what has happened has produced a lot of anger amongst the Palestinians that their neighbours should do such an event. They've had incursions for many years now, but there's no doubt this is the worst they've ever experienced in terms of the length, 22 days as you say, and the extreme number, tonnage of bombs that have been dropped, of all kinds, of all different kinds, as well as the tanks coming in later and in some cases, giving warnings for people to leave, as you said, sometimes behaving in really inhumane ways to a civilian population. And almost every family has some story or other of what's gone on for them. Now, and families have been killed.
Now, Prime Minister Olmert gave an interview over the weekend where he said that Israel's soldiers are trained to be extremely careful to avoid civilian casualties, and he accused those who have leveled accusations against Israel of inappropriate or illegal military action of moral gymnastics. What is your reaction, Dr. Sonia?
I think any soldier is trained in certain ways, but we've seen, as we've seen with the Army of the United States, when you put them in a situation that is in itself inhumane, they will act in certain ways. People change under these pressures. Whatever they're told to do, what they do on the ground and what they do in their actions may not be the same.
All right. Well, let me leave that there, and we will continue in just a moment. Dr. Sonia Robbins is with us live from Gaza in the occupied Palestinian territories. And we'll talk with her next about the violence reported between Hamas and Fatah. If you have a question or comment, we'll try to field it. Call us toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372, The Peter B. Collins Show.
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you, and because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Hello, this is Solazar.
Hi, I'm Carolani.
Good Vibration.
Tools for Transformation
is being preempted by sports programming this month.
We'll run encore presentations of some of your favorite shows on the Internet, so tune in. Good Vibration.
Saturdays from 7 to 9 p.m.
on AM 540 KRXA.
We all know the economy is experiencing some rough times, but some people seem to thrive even in tougher times than this. Want to own their secrets for yourself? Now you can dissolve away your own barriers and blocks to prosperity and success in life despite negative circumstances. Attend a very special transformational two-day event in beautiful Asilomar. The Monterey Center, your one stop for mind, body, spirit wellness, proudly presents How to Prosper and Flourish with international personal transformation and success leader Rinaldo R. Robles, coming to the Monterey Peninsula in Asilomar for 2 days only on Saturday, January 31st and February 1st, 2009. Seating is limited. Call now to 831-641-9812 to reserve your ticket to success at Inspiring Asilomar Conference Grounds today. Call 831-641-9812. That number again, 641-9812.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale here to tell you about Monta Vista Wine and Spirits on Soledad Drive in Monterey. It's family-owned for over 40 years. They have all the best wines. It's the real deal. With a high-end liquor selection, it's all there. And if you have a special request, they'll take care of it for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is open every day, 9 to 9. Call ahead. Your order will be waiting for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, 19 Soledad Drive by Del Monte Center in Monterey. Reminds you to please drink responsibly.
Come here, Max. What's wrong? What? Oh, I get it. A rough day?
Hi, I'm Dr. Annetta Richmond inviting you to Natural Veterinary Therapy in Pacific Grove, the peninsula's new holistic veterinary medicine clinic featuring a wide variety of natural treatments and remedies for common ailments. We also specialize in acupuncture, chiropractic, and physical rehabilitation using an underwater treadmill. Natural Veterinary Therapy, Lighthouse Avenue between 14th and 15th in Pacific Grove. Our environment is unique. Clients comment on how calm and caring it is for their pets and themselves. At Natural Veterinary Therapy, our goal is to help your pet heal from within. So think for yourself and think for your pets. Visit our website at naturalveterinarytherapy.com or call 655-0501. That's 655-0501.
Meow. Whiskers, I'd better call Dr. Richmond for you, too.
Meow, meow.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and we're talking with British medical doctor Sonia Robbins, who is in the Gaza Strip. She's been there about a week now. She went to assist those who have been injured, wounded in the 22 days of Israeli attacks, trying to wipe out Hamas, they said was their goal. But 1,300-plus Palestinians have died. And Dr. Sonia, Hamas claims that only 38 of their fighters were killed. Now, I find that hard to believe, but it also suggests that perhaps more civilians were killed than the Western news agencies actually acknowledge.
I think that's true. I wouldn't know the numbers, and I don't know that anybody can, except Hamas, would be able to quote what the exact figures are, but very few of the injured were hardcore Hamas people, if you like. There mm-hmm. were certainly security folks who were massacred on the first few days. Something like 230 were killed in one bombing on a police security compound.
Mm-hmm.
But the police and the security themselves are just that. They're police.
Yeah.
Some of them are traffic police. They're not. They will carry arms in this situation. More than they would say in England, but certainly probably the same as they might in the States. But they are security. They're not Hamas as such,
mm-hmm.
in the sense of what some people might call the terrorist groups.
Now, about 2 weeks ago at the...
That's the term I would use.
Pardon me. About 2 weeks ago, at the height of the fighting, you attempted to cross from Cyprus into Gaza, I believe on the Human Dignity, one of the Free Gaza Movement boats. And we were attempting to reach you at about the time when Israeli gunboats surrounded your ship and sent it back to Cyprus. Can you tell us about that incident?
Yeah, this particular ship was actually called the Spirit of Humanity.
Oh, thank you.
Which I think was a very appropriate terminology. As we were humanitarian aid on the boat, as well as doctors going to try and get in to Gaza City itself, which at that point was pretty much cut off from any help that might get in from Rafah because of the Jewish or Israeli incursion that split the territories into two or three areas, with Jewish troops in the middle and no safe traffic for ambulances anyway. So we attempted to come into Gaza City directly, and for, I think, about a couple of hours, the Israelis were well aware that we were a humanitarian boat. We carried no arms. Already on the website of the Free Gaza, they will always publish the names of the people traveling.
That's right.
And they continued to say that they would use all means necessary to stop us getting through.
Mm-hmm.
Which is effectively they gave us three warnings that they would fire.
Yeah.
And at no point did they give us any indication of what kind of firing that might be. And the decision was made to turn back.
And you were in international waters at that time.
Sorry?
You were in international waters.
Well in international waters. We were further out from Gaza than the previous boat, which was rammed, which was also still in international waters, but closer to Gaza Strip, if you like, or Gaza waters.
And Dr. Sonia, excuse me, but we just have a minute.
Greek flag.
We just have a minute remaining, and I'd like you to describe the violence that has broken out since the so-called ceasefire between Hamas and Fatah. It appears that scores are being settled. People are being blinded, shot in the legs, and some people have been tortured and killed.
At this moment in time, I can't comment on that. I have not seen any significant events like that.
Oh, really?
I've been in the hospitals and certainly mostly in the burns unit, so we may or may not see initial injuries. I would like to know where that report comes from, because there's certainly some of the security folk are out on the streets, in the corners, etc., as they always have been before, in the recent months at least. I have seen no sign of street fighting, and I have heard of no injuries from colleagues of that nature at all at the moment.
Okay, well, that's very interesting.
It might not happen. I'm not saying it might not happen, but there is a significant ideological difference, if you like, at the moment. But I have not heard of that at all.
Well, the report I'm citing is from the Foreign Service of the San Francisco Chronicle, and a freelance reporter named Matthew Coleman filed that report about a week ago. So I want to thank you, Dr. Sonia. Yes, indeed.
I would say that at that point there is no way that Hamas and Fatah were fighting a week ago. When
Dr. Sonia Robbins, thank you very much. I'm out of time.
Okay.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood Files, sponsored in part by Eden Pure Heaters. Save up to 50% on your heating bills. I'm Charles Osgood. Our colleague Morley Safer first examined the so-called French paradox 17 years ago on 60 Minutes. The paradox is that the French, despite their love for foie gras, duck confit, and wine, have a remarkably low incidence of heart disease. On last night's 60 Minutes, Dr. Christoph Westphal told Safer that an ingredient in red wine concentrated in a pill might soon give us an extra decade or two of healthy old age.
What you're suggesting is there's some kind of rejuvenation drug that turns a 70-year-old into a 35-year-old.
That might be pretty hard to do, but I think if we're on a train heading one direction, we can slow down that train. I think we can slow down these genes that control the aging process.
More after this. Want to cut your heating bills by as much as 50%? The new Eden Pure Generation 3 portable heater with infrared quartz heating elements and solid copper heat exchangers can quietly and safely heat a large room evenly from floor to ceiling with clean, healthy air. I've bought three of them, two for us, one for our daughter and her family in New Hampshire. No fumes or exposed heating elements. Our grandkids can safely touch it. Our cat likes to sit on it. To try the advanced Eden Pure Gen 3 risk-free for 60 days, call 1-800-585-0920 or go to www.edenpuretalkradio.com.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. You know, there's never been a better time to own my new Orrick XL because now the Orrick you've always wanted has a new low price. The amazingly powerful, incredibly lightweight new Orrick XL starts at only $299. Try it risk-free for 30 days. If you don't love it, you don't keep it. Call 1-877-ORIC-21. That's 1-877-ORIC-21. Or visit ORIC.com to find the ORIC store closest to you.
5 years ago, Dr. Christoph Westphal met Harvard biochemist David Sinclair, who was studying the genetic components of aging and analyzing thousands of chemical compounds for longevity. There was one hit, resveratrol, found in the skin of the grapes red wine is made of. Says Sinclair,
I almost fell off my chair when the link was made, and I thought that this was a potential explanation for the benefits of red wine.
Unfortunately, you can't get the longevity benefit from drinking red wine.
The sad news is that you'd need to drink about 1,000 bottles a day.
That would be ridiculous, of course, but listen to this.
The important news here is not that we found something in red wine. The important thing is that we passed a milestone where we can now make drugs based on this knowledge and potentially slow down aging itself.
Experiments, including tests on mice, have been very encouraging. How long might we humans have to wait before we might get these resveratrol benefits in the form of a pill?
I would say 5 years, to be conservative, that this will happen within our lifetimes. I'm fairly certain about that.
The Osgood File. Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
All right, son, fast food, drive-up window, where should I start? From the beginning, this sounds crazy. All right. All right, somebody else grew the food, somebody else prepared it and slaughtered the animal, planned the meal, put it in a bag and handed it to me. Truck's air-conditioned and the building's air-conditioned, but there's 4 or 5 feet in between the two where I might be mildly uncomfortable for a couple of seconds. Are you going to eat something healthy? Haven't you been paying attention? No, I'm having a double bacon cheeseburger and a side order of lard, a bucket of tallow, 5 fried pies, a 22-pound bucket of French fries, sugar-coated chimichanga cinnamon stick, a 65-gallon drum of sugar coke. I'm going to go home and have a cigarette and a bourbon and bitch at the government for not giving me health care that I refuse to pay taxes on in the first goddamn place. God, I'm not telling you.
That's Johnny Steele. I'm Richard Stockton with a minute from the Planet Cruise Comedy Hour.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Sometimes good news comes over right during the program. We just got word that John Conyers, chair of the House Judiciary Committee, has subpoenaed Karl Rove to testify a week from today. Gonna be interesting. Better study your lines, Carl.
Well, there's a little something that's been freaking me. I read it in the news, I seen it on TV. It haunts me in the night and creeps me in the morning. A spooky little thing called global warming. It seems our indispensable amenities, like airspray, air conditioners, and SUVs, are causing big emissions, all of which are forming. A spooky little thing called global warming.
Now, week one of the Obama administration has largely been devoted to cleaning up the messes created by the outgoing Bush administration. He put a hold on the last-minute rules and policy changes that were underway. He reversed the policies on open government, on lobbyists, on the international gag rule for contraception, and also, of course, our torture and detention policies. And, well, today we learn that he is going to make an important shift from the Bush administration's position in 2007. If you recall, in the fall of 2007, an energy bill was passed which called for mild increases in the fleet mileage rates for cars made in the United States, or maybe made and sold. I don't remember the fine print there. But after that occurred, the Bush administration, reaching through the Environmental Protection Agency, denied a request from California to regulate tailpipe emissions from automobiles as a carbon contributor to global warming. This would have had the net effect of requiring higher mileage standards for cars sold in California. And this was not granted by the EPA director, Stephen Johnson, at the time. Well, it's a new day, a new team in Washington, and we get commentary on a new policy from Tom Cackett. He is the chief deputy executive officer at the California Air Resources Board, and CARB has been charged under the landmark legislation AB 32 with implementing California's global warming response. Tom Cackett, welcome to our program today.
Thank you, Peter.
And tell me your thoughts about, number one, the problems that were created by the EPA's denial of this waiver request in the late months of 2007.
Well, their denial of the waiver, which is something that we always have to have before California can move ahead of the federal government in regulating motor vehicle emissions, basically stalled a program that the legislature passed in 2002 and that we developed regulations to implement in 2004. So the main impact has been that the cleaner cars that we were hoping to see on the market were slowed down. The auto manufacturers put less work into them, and to some extent that perhaps is a reason why they are so much in trouble economically now, because people want the kind of cars and trucks that would be available under these regulations and now have been stalled. But fortunately, today, the new president has kind of broken that logjam and opened up the way so that after some due process here, we should be able to move forward with regulating the greenhouse gas emissions from new cars. And it won't be just California, but California and 13 other states that have joined us in this effort.
Interesting. And without getting too bureaucratic and weedy, this goes to the new EPA director, Lisa Jackson, and there is a process that they have to go through before they can grant the waiver because it was previously denied. Do I have that right?
That's right. There were just three things that had to be shown, and the Bush administration chose to deny it on one, and now that that appears to be being changed, they will have to finish looking at the other two issues. But the other two issues are pretty much a slam dunk, and there should really be no reason why we will not get the waiver. We've applied for 50 in the past and got 50 of them, and this was the first time that the EPA ever said no.
And did you suspect politics at play in any way?
Well, I think we have to suspect that there were politics at play because the facts, the science, all of the other process that you normally have to go through to get this approval by the federal government was all laid out in great detail, and yet the wrong conclusion was reached, and it forced us to actually have to sue EPA, which is, if this change hadn't come along, what we would have been doing this spring was being in court to convince the judges that EPA had made a wrong decision. Unfortunately, I think we won't have to do that now.
Mm-hmm. And so in what time frame do you expect the waiver to be granted, and then at what point will the Air Resources Board move to regulate tailpipe emissions and enhance the standards here in California?
Well, we hope that they will be able to act on the waiver here by spring. And at that point, the regulations go into effect right away. They've been adopted and gone through all the process that you would have to make a regulation under state law, and it was just this sort of federal checkoff that was necessary. And once that happens, then we'll be able to move forward.
All right, and tell me if this is correct. This is from Monday's New York Times. It says, the California law, originally meant to take effect in the 2009 model year, requires automakers to cut emissions by nearly a third by 2016, 4 years ahead of the federal timetable. The result would be an increase in fuel efficiency in the American car and light truck fleet to roughly 35 miles per gallon from the current average of 27.
Yes, those numbers are roughly correct.
Okay. And in the bigger picture, as you look to manage the whole array of emission sources here in California, how much are automobiles a contributor, and how much will these changes reduce our carbon output?
Well, the state legislature and the governor passed a law that requires us to return our emissions to 1990 levels by 2020, and that's roughly a 30% reduction. And of all that reduction that we have to get, cars are going to be about 25% of it. So if this waiver had continued to be denied and we hadn't, we're unable to implement this rule, we would have failed that test. There would have been no way to get our emissions back on a path towards reduction rather than increase. And fortunately, with this will be the single biggest thing that we can do to reduce greenhouse gas emissions.
We're talking with Tom Cackett from the California Air Resources Board here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Tom, there was a cartoon, was in today's San Francisco Chronicle from Tom Tolles. It shows Obama going into the basement of the White House and opening up a cell where science has been incarcerated. And he says, well, we're going to let you out. I don't remember what the line is, but you get the idea of the cartoon. What other fronts do you feel the Bush administration blocked progress by either using phony science or just political gamesmanship? And what other relief are you seeking from the new Obama administration in this zone?
Well, the area of regulation of motor vehicles is kind of unique in that it is the purview of the federal government, and California has been singled out under federal law to say that we can go ahead and do something more aggressive, more different, more pioneering. And so it's really in this area that that we've seen where we have to interact with the federal government. And quite frankly, in almost all the other things that we've done that have brought lower smog levels to San Francisco and to Los Angeles and have cleaned up the skies that so many people notice now, those were all approved by the EPA. So this one was unique in that it was singled out, and as you indicated, a denial could not be based on the facts, had to be based on something else than that. So this is really the only area where I think they have sort of held California back. Now, California has taken action where there's been inaction at the federal government. We've passed a comprehensive program to regulate and reduce greenhouse gas emissions. We're aggressively moving forward to that to develop a cap-and-trade program, which is a market-based program that would allow industries and other sources to clean up their greenhouse gas emissions in an economic-based way. And all of those things, Governor Schwarzenegger has, you know, provided leadership in those areas when there was no leadership at the federal level. So they weren't in our way. They just weren't helping. And now I think with the new Obama administration, you're going to see that they will want to be in partnership with the states so that we move forward nationally to control greenhouse gases. And hopefully that will lead to international efforts that will be needed to ultimately solve this problem.
And, Tom, I have my differences and quibbles with Governor Schwarzenegger on many fronts, but I do have to say that he's been willing to buck the Republican establishment and the Bush administration in the past to support this landmark legislation and to acknowledge the scope of the problem and the need to address it quickly. I understand he gave a news conference a couple of hours ago, and I didn't get to hear it. Did he have anything significant to report, do you know?
Well, on this issue, his support for moving forward with to reduce climate change or greenhouse gas emissions, to he said it was an important day because the new administration had reversed what the Bush administration had prevented us from doing, and so I think his support for doing things to clean up the environment and to address climate change was as strong as ever, and probably the strongest of any governor anywhere in the United States. So there's no weakening, and I think he was very pleased to see this announcement by President Obama.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And, Tom, what else would you like to add here in terms of this relationship between the State Air Resources Board and the federal government, and what else is on your agenda here going forward?
Well, rather than talk more about what's gone on with the federal government, let me just make a comment for your listeners that these new cars are going to be something that they're going to want. They will cost more money, maybe as much as $1,000 more, but they'll save you over the lifetime of a car at least $3,000 and maybe more in gasoline. They'll perform just as well. They'll be just as big as you want them to be. It's just that they're going to put out a lot less greenhouse gas emissions and use a lot less fuel. So every month when you have to make a little bit more of a payment on that new car, you'll be getting far more than that back in saved fuel in your pocketbook. So this is a win-win situation. It's just really unfortunate that we were slowed down, but I think now you know, we're ready to go ahead.
All right. And Tom, finally, if you'd give me a 1 minute update on the implementation of AB 32. The last time we talked to Mary Nichols, you were entering the scoping phase of this, taking public comments. What are the next steps, and when will the cap-and-trade system start to become a reality?
Well, the scoping effort, which is basically a plan for the future, was formally adopted late last year, and it's in place now. It's up to the Air Resources Board and many, many other agencies and local governments in California to go ahead now and achieve the emission reductions, and those range from regulations like we've talked about for cars, and there's some for trucks, to setting targets for local governments to try to reduce the impact of local decisions and land use planning and things like that on emissions. And there's controls for power plants, for getting us clean electricity, for using renewable sources, and on. It's quite extensive, but what we've shown is that overall it will benefit California's economy because there's nothing better than being more efficient, and that's sort of the first and foremost aspect of this program, is to use our limited resources more efficiently, and that means that there'll be fewer greenhouse gases emitted into the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good plan, and I think it's something that will ultimately benefit California very much.
Well, Tom, thank you for joining us today, and it's always good to see progress, a reversion to science-based governing. It's novel, but I welcome it.
Well, it's something that we depend on, so we're very glad about it, too.
All right. Thank you, sir. Tom Cackett, he is the Chief Deputy Executive Officer of the California Air Resources Board. Coming up next, we're going to compare John Boehner's fast-acting tax cuts for their stimulus value with other ways of pumping federal money into the economy. Larry Mischel from the Economic Policy Institute will join me next here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
KRXA 540. Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Visit our website at krxa540.com. The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer.
The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
The $64,000 question.
I've got a word or two to say about the things that you do.
Hi, it's Bob Oliver with the Quantum Leap and the $64,000 question. Where do you go to get a free checking account, no minimum balance, and they give you free money? And the answer is Wachovia Bank in the Sand Dollar Shopping Center in Sand City across from Borders. Wow, I got a lot of advertising in there. Remember, you're going to get money, free money, just by mentioning my name, Bob Oliver, at Wachovia Bank. Free money, free checking, and no minimum balance. Think for yourself. The Quantum Leap and KRXA 540.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Taxing tax cuts? Grab your wallet.
Sometimes pretend to be your friend. Smiling faces show no traces of the evil that lurks within. Smiling faces.
And I don't know about you, but every time I see John Boehner on television, kind of reminds me of Dean Martin. It's like he just came from the bar and he'd be happy to get you a drink too.
Smiling faces tell lies, and I got
so let's get some expert advice here on the best way to stimulate America's troubled economy. Larry Michel, the president of the Economic Policy Institute, joins us on the line right now. Larry, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, it's nice to talk with you, and our go-to guy has gone to the White House. For many years now, we've been talking to Jared Bernstein out of your shop, and I understand that he's got a new job with the vice president's office.
He's the economic advisor to Vice President Joe Biden, and I like the sound of that.
Don't you?
Yeah, you know, Jared and I wrote 11 books together. We're best friends. We're intellectual alter egos, and it's nice that he's there.
Yeah, that is great. And just to know that the kind of information and policy analysis that has been coming from EPI is going to be input to the government is really rewarding because, well, you published during the Bush administration, but you probably didn't feel you had much real impact on their economic policies.
Yes, that's we may have by, you know, giving them a hard time.
Well, I mean,
the
one big failure that Bush wanted was the privatization of Social Security. And I give progressives and Democrats real points for blocking that, because you often don't, it's something as a negative that it's something you don't get immediate credit for. It's not like a piece of legislation like raising the minimum wage, but it really was one of the most effective efforts by the Democrats and one of the most important battles that they won during the Bush era.
Well, I think it's one of the major areas where Bush really overreached. And as a result, I think he paid a big political price. The more he went around the country trying to sell it, the worse it looked for that policy proposal. And now that we've seen what's happened to the stock market in the last year or so, I doubt many people are very sad that we didn't pursue Social Security privatization.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think it became very clear to every American, including the morons who had promoted it. Now, Larry, I wanted to talk about an analysis that came out of the Economic Policy Institute today, because it's very important in shaping this debate over the stimulus package. And I'm disappointed that the Obama administration has given so much ground to Republicans to include tax cuts in this package in order to get their votes. Now, we don't need their votes in the House. We do need their votes in the Senate. And so I can understand the maneuvers that Obama has been making. But you show in stark numbers that tax cuts don't have much of a stimulus effect. And we know that even the middle-class tax cuts that Obama campaigned on, and I do want him to follow through with, they will offer some relief, but most people will hoard that money. They won't go out and buy goods and services with it.
Well, I think you're onto something. I think we should specifically focus on the wasteful throwing money at business tax cuts.
Mm-hmm.
These were done in 2008 as well as in 2003. And no one talks about them because everybody realizes it's a political payoff to the GOP to get them to do things. That's what happened in 2008. I think it's even a little bit, if you're a cynic, which I am every other day.
Hopefully today is one of those days.
Yeah, well, you recognize that some of the Democrats like to throw money at business, too. They just don't want to be so obvious about it. So
right.
The Republicans don't really have to twist their arms so much. But here's why it doesn't work is economics. Giving money to business or accelerating the depreciation of their equipment or letting them get money back for taxes paid 5 years ago when they made a profit, when they have a loss today. These are some of the things that are being talked about. Why that doesn't matter is they won't take that money and invest it or hire people. Because when you're in a recession, the problem is businesses don't have enough customers. If they had customers to sell things to produce goods and services, and could sell and make a profit, they would hire people and they would invest and build out their capacity.
Mm-hmm.
Giving them money doesn't do that. That's just an essential common sense insight. So it is a waste of money. Now, you commented, I think, is correct. That's the economics of it. Then there's the politics. What should the Obama administration do? Should they include this kind of tax cuts to attract Republicans or not? And I guess what I would describe what they're doing is they're bargaining with themselves. They throw it in there without ever having the agreement of anybody that says, okay, if you do this, we will support you. Because now what the Republicans are doing is saying we need more in tax cuts. But that doesn't make so much sense to me because no one seems to be calling them on the fact that that's what we did in 2003 and 2004, and we never created the jobs they said would come from that. We gave them businesses a lot of money in $50 billion in early 2008. No one even bothers to claim that that was successful.
Mm-hmm.
So these are the tried and failed policies of the past.
Yeah. Well, and you made a very important point there about Democrats negotiating with themselves. It's the same fabulous process that they used to get the bailout TARP bill passed last fall. And the Republicans kind of sat on the sidelines while Pelosi and the White House tried to work out a deal, and the Democrats kept giving concessions. It was just bizarre. Now, I want to get the numbers out here because this is very important. If you give a dollar to food stamps, a dollar to extending unemployment benefits, $1.73 flows through the economy from food stamps, $1.64 from unemployment benefits, infrastructure spending, bridges, and those kinds of things. $1 gets you $1.59. If you hand off money to the states, $1 gets you $1.36. But the tax cuts are worth it. 37 cents is what you get out of a dollar's worth of dividend and capital gains tax cuts, 30 cents on corporate tax cuts, and if we made the Bush tax cuts permanent, about 29 cents per each dollar in tax reduced. So we see very clearly that the best way to stimulate the economy is to give it to working families and poor families in the form of food stamps, benefits like unemployment, and public spending. Do we think that this kind of reality will prevail, Larry?
Well, it takes politics to get this through, and I guess, this is the way the President Obama wants to operate. Well, we can see whether it works. Hopefully he'll learn from it if it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I would divide up the three categories that I think are being discussed in the economic recovery package of spending.
Mm-hmm.
One is public investments in things that we know we're going to need and are going to help us way into the future.
And Larry, we'll have to save those other two. I'm sorry, the clock has run. We'll talk again soon. Larry Michel from the Economic Policy Institute. He's their president. Thanks, Larry.
Bye-bye.
Bonjour, this is Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. I've created a special offer for you to try my French wines made from organically grown grapes. For a limited time, when you buy two bottles, you get one bottle free, and I'll even pay for the shipping. I know you love the taste of these handcrafted wines from my ancestors' lands, especially if you care about our planet and your health. Imagine, you can have organic French wine delivered to your door for less than $12 a bottle. I've made this free wine and free shipping offer available to you because I believe you'll become a lifelong customer once you've tasted our wines. The French Bouquet Collection at ecowine.com includes my red Chateau Véronique from Languedoc, my white Viognier, and my Blanquette de Limoux sparkling wine. All French, organically grown, and affordable.
For free delivery, click on ecowine.com/Peter B. That's ecowine.com/.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Jobs being cut by the tens of thousands.
Basically, this is an economy-wide slowdown. It's not in specific industries. Almost everybody has been hit. There is really nowhere to hide.
A push for lower emissions and higher gas mileage.
Today, I'm announcing the first steps on our journey toward energy independence.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Bill Whitney. Another week, another round of layoffs. Pfizer announcing a $68 billion deal to acquire Wyeth said it's eliminating 8,000 jobs.
This avalanche of job cut announcements just continues. These companies see a much weaker global economic picture.
Daniel Hoffman is a pharmaceutical industry analyst. Sprint Nextel is also losing 8,000 jobs. Texas Instruments cutting 3,400. Caterpillar, nearly 20,000. Jim Artis is mayor of Peoria, Illinois, where the equipment maker has his headquarters.
When somebody like Caterpillar gets in a position like this for that type of a layoff, there's certainly a ripple effect. It hits other business. It hits the restaurants and a lot of the other retails.
I'm Dan Revive at a Home Depot store in Washington, D.C. This national chain announced 7,000 layoffs, about 2% of the workforce.
Oh, it stinks. I guess it's finally starting to hit us.
Customers feel bad for the workers.
No, they definitely shouldn't cut back at all. They really need more people.
People aren't buying tools, and lumber just trickles down. Unfortunately, Home Depot's doing poorly, and they're laying off.
The company closing all 34 of its Expo design centers.
Even with more economic stimulus in the pipeline, CBS News correspondent Anthony Mason says we can expect these layoffs to keep coming.
Most economists now say they think that the unemployment rate is going to continue to rise through this year into the beginning of next year, that the unemployment rate could go as high as 9%, it's 7.2% now, perhaps even higher if the stimulus package is not as effective as we hope.
Now this.
It's a different world out there today, so it's good to know there are some things you can count on, like the quality of a Honda. Honda has the most durable, long-lasting line of cars in its class, which is one reason Honda can continue to offer affordable leasing when some other auto manufacturers can't. Honda. Simple. Go to shophonda.com to build and price your own Accord. Durability based on longevity. Longevity based on Arlo Polk & Company U.S. Vehicles and Operation Registration Statistics 1988 through 2007 for Honda and competing models.
So the other morning, I get an email from Moe's, my absolute favorite deli, whose pastrami I would actually kill for, which is probably why I gave him my email in the first place. Anyway, I'm like, wow, Moe's sending emails with coupons and photos? I want to bite my computer screen. Then it hits me. Eggs and pastrami hash for breakfast.
Email marketing from ConstantContact.com helps showcase your business, just like Mo. There's even free phone support with real live people. Get a free 60-day trial at ConstantContact.com.
President Obama has gone to the Treasury Department to watch Vice President Joe Biden swear in the new Treasury Secretary so he can get right to work. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss reports Tim Geithner won approval late today on a vote of 60-34.
Geithner was easily confirmed by the Senate despite reservations by Republican Michael Enzi and others about his failure to pay thousands of dollars in Social Security taxes.
You couldn't find anyone better? Anyone better?
Democrat Chris Dodd says Geithner, now head of the New York Fed, is exactly the person needed at the job right now.
And restoring our economy is our defining challenge. And Tim Geithner, I believe, is the right person to begin this effort.
Geithner's immediate task, figuring out how to spend $350 billion to try to keep the banking industry afloat. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
President Obama issued an order today that's designed to reduce air pollution from cars and trucks and reduce the amount of fuel they burn. CBS News correspondent Peter Mayer has that.
The president's order requires the EPA to reconsider whether California and other states can enact their own tougher auto emission standards. He's reversing the Bush administration's opposition to giving that pollution control power to the states.
The federal government must work with, not against, states to reduce greenhouse gas emissions.
The president also wants stepped up fuel efficiency guidelines that would kick in with 2011 model year cars.
This rule will be a down payment on a broader and sustained effort to reduce our dependence on foreign oil.
Mr. Obama says a revised energy policy will have an impact on the overall economy and the environment. Peter Mayer, CBS News, the White House.
The governor's chair was empty as the Illinois State Senate opened Rob Blagojevich's impeachment trial. He was in New York appearing on ABC's The View.
Under no circumstances was I trying to sell a Senate seat. Under no circumstances did I break any laws.
Blagojevich expects to be removed from office. He said the fix is in. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Individual results may vary. Program not available in all states. See contract for complete terms.
If you're tired of credit card debt with high rates and fees, if you're in over your head dealing with high monthly payments, there's powerful information that credit card companies don't want you to know. If you have more than $10,000 in credit card debt, you have the power to settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe. That's bad news for credit card companies, but it's great news for you. We're Credit Answers, and we'd like to offer you free information that will show you how to settle your credit card debt with low monthly payments you can afford. It's yours free by calling 1-800-400-4970. You don't have to declare bankruptcy. Credit Answers represents the highest standards in the industry. We've already helped thousands of people like you save millions of dollars. Just give us 10 minutes and learn how we can help you live better, debt-free. Call for this valuable free information at 1-800-400-4970. That's 1-800-400-4970. 1-800-400-4970.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
An hour away, we'll get a live report from Dick Kaye in Chicago on the political comedy reality series called Blago. This hour, we're going to take a close look at Barack Obama's inauguration speech last week. Jeffrey Feldman joins me in a moment.
Anybody here seen my old friend Abraham? Can you tell me where he's gone? He freed a lot of people, but it seems good they die young. Just look around and he's gone.
And just as Dion's song here, Abraham, Martin, and John, draws on the history of numerous political figures, a couple of presidents, Jeffrey Feldman has discovered, by analyzing Barack Obama's speech, the connections to inaugural and political speeches of the past. Jeffrey Feldman's most recent book is Outright Barbarous, How the Violent Language of the Right Poisons American Democracy. And his previous book is a look at famous presidential speeches called Framing the Debate. Jeffrey, great to talk to you again. Thanks.
Hi, Pete.
Thanks for joining me today.
Hey, it's great to be here.
First up, tell me what it was like for you. I've read a piece that you posted at your website, frameshopisopen.com, about your own experience attending the Obama inaugural.
It was an amazing, amazing day. And, you know, once you kind of dealt with the fact that it was absolutely freezing cold out there, it was really incredible to be out there on the Mall. What I did was I stood right by the Washington Monument with about, 100,000 of my closest friends. We gathered around in a giant huddle around one of the Jumbotrons, and it was just extraordinary to be in the presence of so many people who were overcome with emotions. That really, for me, was, you know, I think it was a unique moment in my entire life. I can't imagine I'll ever be in a crowd that size ever again.
Yeah.
And just the outpouring of warmth from strangers was something that I had never, ever experienced. It was really something else to be walking around Washington, D.C., where they had closed off the entire Central District area. So it's just people walking around, and it was literally shoulder-to-shoulder people just about everywhere you went.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an incredible pilgrimage, and to be there while so many people travel from across the country, from around the world, to witness this incredible event, it's something that I won't soon forget.
Yeah. And, Jeffrey, to the speech itself, I thought it was well-crafted. I thought it sounded a number of important themes. At the same time, I have to give Obama an exceptional public speaker, only about an 8.5 on a 10 scale. He was a little rushed. He seemed a little preoccupied. There were times when he waited for applause lines, other times when he chewed on them, ate them. And so I don't know if that's your assessment, too, but that was my take on his delivery.
On the delivery, it's interesting, Peter, because we had about a 5-second delay where I was standing. So people were not so much responding to the actual moment in the speech as they were responding to other people cheering at other places on the National Mall. It was a really strange dynamic to be out there listening to it. But going back over the video, last week, I agree with you. It was not the speech of his life. And I think that almost immediately people got that sense. And it is interesting to note that, you know, in the rise of Barack Obama's presence on our national stage, he began with a speech that essentially overtook the event that it was in. His speech in the last 2004 Democratic Convention was the speech that became the moment. It swept everyone up into it. And this time, it almost seemed like it was the exact opposite, that the experience of the inauguration itself was so much bigger than any single speech.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a lot that was packed into it. And in terms of first impressions, my first impression was, my goodness, how different it is to have a president who seems to actually study up American rhetoric and American history such that when he gives a speech, he is actually steeped in it. With Bush, you know, it seemed like Bush was, his speeches, he had a familiarity with them, like you might have a familiarity with a rented tuxedo. I mean, it just didn't seem like Bush really cared. And, you know, everybody says that Bush was not intellectually curious, but my goodness, Obama really, really did seem to spend a great deal of time studying up for it. From what I understand, he prepared most of it himself, and just later on he had speechwriters come in and help him polish it up.
Yeah. Well, I do sense, I don't know how much speechwriters contributed to any particular parts of it, but it really did reflect his voice and his vision. And it's interesting in the reaction from the Bushies, who were kind of having a wake on the presidential flight, no longer Air Force One, when it took him back to Texas. Here's a quote from Karen Hughes. "Well, there were a few sharp elbows that really rankled, and I felt they were not as magnanimous as the occasion called for. He really missed an opportunity to be as big as the occasion was, and frankly, as gracious as President Bush was as he left office." Dan Bartlett, "It was a missed opportunity to bring some of the president's loyal supporters into the fold." Well, as Rahm Emanuel, and he's not my favorite guy, but he's quoted as saying, well, if they didn't know that that was the judgment of the people, then their subscription to the newspapers must have been canceled over the last 3 years.
Or maybe even longer than that.
Yeah.
You know, in my part of the crowd, people were having trouble holding back the boos when they saw Bush, and a lot of people turned to each other after the beginning moment in the speech when Obama actually acknowledged Bush. They turned to each other and they said, wow, that was really generous. I'm not so sure I would have done the same. So there was a lot of people who noticed how much Obama in the beginning of the speech bent over to be magnanimous.
Well, in honesty, I thought it was kind of perfunctory. The line was very simple. I thank President Bush for his service to our nation, as well as the generosity and cooperation he's shown throughout the transition. No mention of Cheney. Thank you very much. And, I thought it was adequate, but he wasn't lathering it on, and he delivered it very quickly and clearly moved on from that as fast as he could say it.
Absolutely, yeah. I don't think that he wanted to dwell on that. He really had a message that he wanted to get out. And a setting of the stage, I think, that he saw this speech as an incredible opportunity to step into and to frame a moment that a few people have had that type of opportunity. So he did perhaps seem a little bit hasty to cut right to his own particular agenda.
Now, do you think that some of the, the less than perfect delivery was a result of the flubbed inaugural oath? Because I do think that that's kind of set the tone, and that at first I think Chief Justice Roberts, got jumped on by Obama. He read the line, I, Barack Hussein Obama, do solemnly swear, but Obama jumped in right after his name. And so then Roberts proceeded to flub the order of the rest of the oath. And so I do think that both of them were nervous, stressed out, and then it was kind of on their minds after that occurred.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine a moment where one would be more nervous than this particular moment, but it was very odd to see that happen. And Obama did seem to jump the gun a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It was a freezing cold day. There was a lot of pressure on the speech. A lot of eyes were on it. And I think that Obama, in watching him speak throughout the campaign, he is someone who, when he delivers new material, it takes him some time to catch his stride. It's an irony, I think, in his speaking style that he has this reputation for soaring and being instantly inspirational. But if you actually listen to the pace of his speeches, the first few minutes of most of his speeches tend to be a little bit deadpan. And then he seems to remember, either because he has margin notes or because he just rediscovers his own sense of purpose. And then he lifts it up at the end of the speech. And I think that that's what happened in the inaugural address as well.
Yeah. Now, over the course of this hour, Jeffrey, we're going to play some excerpts from the speech and get your analysis, because you found threads from four different presidencies and, in some cases, their own inaugural addresses. And we'll talk about that. So that's what we'll do coming up. And if people have comments or questions about Obama's inaugural address, we're happy to talk with you during this hour. You can call in toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And, Jeffrey, before we go to our first break here, I just wanted to ask you a quick comment about his salutation. Because typically in these addresses, and I don't have texts in front of me, but I recall, ladies and gentlemen, the Chief Justice, head of the Senate, Speaker of the House, they go through a whole laundry list of public officials, dignitaries, and then say, my fellow Americans. But he was very simple and dispensed with the colorful oratory and just opened with, my fellow citizens. What did you think about that?
It was an interesting opener, and what came to mind was almost the simplicity of Lincoln. I think that one of the things that we've heard a lot about was how much that Obama has been thinking about and looking into Lincoln. He used Lincoln's Bible, and that opening, simple opening sentence, the opening line, my fellow citizens, colon, I stand here today humbled by the task before us, it really did initially remind me of Lincoln's voice and the really basic, straightforward way that Lincoln, for example, spoke in the Gettysburg Address. So I don't think that Obama was trying to be dismissive of the incredible assemblage that was up there on the steps of the Senate. But I think he did want to have a distinctive tone that was all his own, perhaps to break with convention in that way.
Well, and it's interesting because Obama likes crowds. He likes spectacle. but he uses it to talk one-on-one to the American on the other end of the television tube. And so that's what I got from it, was a real directness and a kind of intimacy, despite the spectacle around him.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. And it goes to, I think, also a theme that comes up later on in his speech, which I'm sure we'll get to greater in depth, this notion of service and the way that, in the particular way that he framed it, about everybody needed to take responsibility. And in that sense, it seems plausible that he would be speaking one-on-one with someone rather than wanting people to think that he was soaring above the crowd, that he was trying to reach some type of historic rhetorical refrain.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. We'll continue with Jeffrey Feldman. Framing the Debate is his book about famous presidential speeches, and his more recent book is called Outright Barbarous. He's with us this entire hour. Your calls and comments are welcome on the Obama inaugural address at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372, The Peter B. Collins Show.
You're listening to KRXA 540.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the moment last.
Hello, I'm Barbara Mossberg. You know you move too fast. And I'm inviting you to join me Sundays to slow down for our poetry hour. Here's the lowdown on our poetry hoedown. Meet me at high noon, and we'll make the morning last, right here on KRXA 540.
What you knowin'? I've come to
Hey, we are people. Tomorrow Matters is back on air Sundays from 10 to 11 a.m.
Green Talk Radio for the Central Coast.
I'm Deborah Lindsay.
And I'm Spencer Lindsay.
Join us as we dazzle you with local solutions to environmental issues.
We'll be talking about things like climate change,
green building,
alternative energy and transportation,
water conservation,
organic farming,
and bicycles,
and a whole lot more.
Join us on KRXA 540 AM, Sunday mornings at 10.
Ever thought about shipping your child to a remote island? Want to send them to their room for the rest of their life? I can help. I'm Mark LeCluse, an intern psychotherapist practicing in SoCal under the supervision of Dr. Chaim Barton. For the past 10 years, I've been helping parents, teens, and kids overcome challenges in their lives, and I'd like to help you too. I can work with your family to resolve conflicts, improve communications, and solve problems. Together, we can turn struggles and challenges into opportunities for growth and connection. I offer an affordable sliding scale, and I'm currently accepting new clients. Please call for an appointment. 831-818-4033. Parenting doesn't have to be so hard. I'm Mark LeCluse. Give me a call. 818-4033. That's 818-4033.
What would life be without flowers? It would be like a birthday cake with no candles, a wedding with no ring. It would be like a graduation without friends and relatives, a promotion without a raise. Thankfully, life is full of flowers and reasons to give them. In fact, sometimes the best reason is no reason at all. And all you have to do is stop by or call Ferrari Florists and Gifts. You see, flowers from Ferrari Florists and Gifts are more personal and special because whatever you're celebrating, we can create unique arrangements from a wide selection of fresh-cut flowers, and we can deliver them the same day, so you can enjoy life and even declare your love with flowers. Call Ferrari Florists and Gifts today at 460-7000 or visit our website at www.ferrariflorist.com. And we'll help you realize the true potential of flowers. Ferrari Florists and Gifts, 514 Front Street, Santa Cruz. Experts in the art of expression.
Good afternoon. This is Mrs. Sunshine with your KRXA 540 traffic and weather. There's a traffic hazard northbound 101 at Hobson Ave in King City. Also in King City, southbound 101 and near Route 17, a traffic collision. In Santa Cruz, we've got an accident southbound Route 1 just south of Morrissey, and also 17th Ave at Portola with a couple of southbound lanes closed. Near Aromas on 129, a bunch of sheep in the road, so try to avoid that. And now, on to weather. Tonight, And today, partly cloudy with highs in the low to mid-50s, lows near freezing. Tomorrow, sunny with a slow warming trend over the week. So, enjoy. Stay tuned for Peter B.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, 23 minutes after the hour. We continue our analysis of Barack Obama's inaugural address last week. Jeffrey Feldman is our expert commentator. Visit his website at frameshopisopen.com. He's contributed quite a bit, I think, to the dialogue about framing and language, particularly in the new dark ages of the Bush era. Jeffrey, I've got a clip here. This is from early in the speech, and I'll play it and then get your comments in your online post. You link this to a famous speech by a president from the 1970s.
We are in the midst of crisis is now well understood. Our nation is at war against a far-reaching network of violence and hatred. Our economy is badly weakened, a consequence of greed and irresponsibility on the part of some, but also our collective failure to make hard choices and prepare the nation for a new age. Homes have been lost, jobs shed, businesses shuttered. Our health care is too costly, our schools fail too many, and each day brings further evidence that the ways we use energy strengthen our adversaries and threaten our planet. These are the indicators of crisis, subject to data and statistics. Less measurable, but no less profound, is a sapping of confidence across our land. A nagging fear that America's decline is inevitable, that the next generation must lower its sights. Today, I say to you that the challenges we face are real. They are serious and they are many. They will not be met easily or in a short span of time. But know this, America, they will be met.
So, Jeffrey, tell us whose earlier speech you connect this to.
I connect that to President Carter's speech that he gave in 1979. It was a televised speech. It's sometimes referred to as the malaise speech or the crisis of confidence speech, where he addressed the nation about a series of issues. Primarily, it was the spiraling, it was inflation. It was just out of control. There were gas lines at the pumps. And it was really the first time that President Carter got on television and he spoke to the American public about this deepening crisis. And it really reminded me of the opening passages and some other passages in that speech, in particular the way that Obama took all these various crises together and he reframed them in terms of national character. He's saying, look, there are specific problems in our foreign policy, in our economy, in a lot of different aspects of what we have to deal with over the next few years, and it is starting to snowball into this sense that we as Americans cannot give to our children a better world than we had. It's that fundamental notion of progress that Carter used in that speech, saying that up to this point in our history, we have always believed that we are working for a better world than we were born into. We give our children something better than we had, and we've lost that confidence. And to fix all these problems, the same message that Carter had, to fix all these problems, we have to rediscover the fundamental American principles that this country was founded on. It was a great beginning, I thought, to the speech.
Well, it was a strong dose of realism at a very difficult time. But as I look back at the malaise speech, we called it the mayonnaise speech at the time, too, I thought that Carter was very courageous, pardon me, in going on television and saying, look, we've got problems and we need to work them out. But he was hammered by Sonny Ronald Reagan, who came in and blamed Carter for the misery index and kind of made him out to be a whiner for simply telling the truth. And so I think Obama has a different circumstance and also just a different chemistry. And I don't believe that his message met the same fate as Jimmy Carter's.
Absolutely not. And people will recall that Jimmy Carter also had a very different style backstage. He had some difficulties in building the types of necessary coalition that you need in order to make a speech that which you address such a huge concept as a crisis of confidence, essentially saying that the, this crisis in the economy, in our foreign policy, in the environment, this is something that each of us has feeling in the level of our personal character. And by the time Carter made that statement, as courageous as it was, he had already lost a lot of footing in terms of the coalition that he had. So Obama already has a much stronger position to stand on when he makes this statement.
Yeah. And also to acknowledge that part of our crisis is confidence, that our trust has been violated, that Wall Street has done it, that the Bush administration did it, and that he has a major task in trying to restore that intangible. It's a very difficult challenge for him.
I think it's a hugely difficult challenge, and if there was any moment up there on the stage where, you know, if I were President Bush, I really would have felt the sting of this comment. It's having that the Bush presidency and all that it stood for lumped together with the financial crisis, with the situation in Iraq, with the environment, as something that contributes to national confidence, the weakening of national confidence. I think that, you know, really reminded me of Carter's way of trying to address the crisis that Nixon had created, this whole notion that it's not just the policies, it's not just the numbers, it is also how we think about the people in our government as a result of how people have behaved. And that was a very, very strong statement for directly.
Jeffrey Feldman with us more in a moment right here.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Looking for love. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. Does America's heart have room for Rob Blagojevich? Can we muster some sympathy for a man being impeached just because there are tape recordings which appear to show him trying to sell Barack Obama's old Illinois Senate seat? Tapes which include the famous quote, "I've got this thing and it's bleeping golden and I'm not just giving it up for bleeping nothing." On NBC, he said the ordeal brought to mind mythic figures in the fight for justice.
I had a whole bunch of thoughts. Of course, my children and my wife and then I thought about Mandela, Dr. King, Gandhi, and try to put some perspective in all of this.
I guess I missed the tape where Mandela said, "This struggle against apartheid is bleepin' golden. I'm not just giving it up for bleepin' nothing." On ABC, he pointed out that he considered lots of people for the Senate job, even Oprah.
She seemed to be someone who had helped Barack Obama in a significant way become president. She was obviously someone with a much broader bully pulpit than other senators.
But he finally rejected the idea as looking too much like a gimmick. And hey, as governor, he already gets a free car. I think his problem is going to be that, as unfair as this impeachment might be, he's talking to a country that's seen 40% of its retirement savings disappear. Now, that's unfair. Politicians have known since Nixon, and certainly since Clinton, that if you've ever behaved like a jerk, it's probably on tape somewhere. So before you run, either learn to control yourself or at least figure out a foolproof way to cover it up. And if you can't do that, get into banking. Then you can become too big to be impeached. Now this.
All right, construction crews. Everybody ready?
Ready in Chicago.
Montgomery.
Honolulu. Oh, who's in Honolulu?
It's Tim from Boston. I just got transferred to Hawaii. Wicked good weather they got here.
Buy one Motorola i576 phone for $69.99. Get up to four free with Sprint, the fastest national push-to-talk network. Call 1-800-NEXTEL-9. Only on the Now Network. Fastest based on initial call setup time. Offers for eligible business accounts only. See Sprint stores for availability. Ends 4/18/09. Subject to 2-year agreement. Up to $36 activation, $200 early termination fees. Credit approval and deposit per line. Restrictions apply.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Debbie LaSala from LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli at 250 Casa Verde Way in Monterey. Buy Right has been a family-owned Monterey Bay treasure since 1938. Hungry for delicious sandwiches? Join the many LaSala regulars who love our tasty, hearty sandwiches prepared with fresh-baked Palermo bread. Eat in or grab on the run at LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli. Whatever your choice, we at LaSala's will greet you with Mon Pa hospitality and truly awesome meals. And remember, sandwich trays are also available for meetings and parties. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli is located on the west side of Highway 1, exiting at 250 Casa Verde Way and going just past the first stop sign. For more information, call 372-6824. That's 372-6824. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli. A Mon Pa treasure at your service for 70 years.
I'm Glenn Sadowski from Optimal Health Acupuncture in Monterey. Did you know that over one-third of all Americans have tried alternative medicine for relief from chronic pain, depression, asthma, and many other disorders? that acupuncture is safe and effective and has been in use for thousands of years, or that traditional Chinese medicine treats not only your symptoms but the actual root causes of disease. At Optimal Health, we offer acupuncture, lymphatic, deep tissue, and hot stone massage, have a full Chinese herbal pharmacy, and for acupuncture, we accept insurance. Reclaim yourself at Optimal Health at 655-3208, where clients take a proactive role in their well-being, make informed decisions, and create healthier lifestyles. Call Optimal Health Acupuncture today at 655-3208 or on the web at OptimalHealthMonterey.com. Optimal Health, where you'll receive good medicine with great results. Think for yourself at Optimal Health.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
Ooh, I'm glad I'm not a Kennedy. Imagine being a Kennedy, rule without remedy. Watch your family die, the world loves a sacrifice. This song is for the free, on the ring of tragedy, the hunger for the crime, the privilege.
The right to breathe air, as nature provided it, the right of future generations to a healthy existence.
As Obama was sworn in and gave his inaugural address, the Kennedy legacy was quite evident. Ted Kennedy was there, despite his very serious illness, and he had a seizure at the luncheon right after the inauguration. He's fine now. And JFK's daughter Caroline was still in contention to be appointed to the U.S. Senate seat vacated by Hillary Clinton from New York. We're talking with Jeffrey Feldman, listening to excerpts of Obama's inaugural address and getting Jeffrey's commentary on it. And let me play this next clip, and then you'll tell us why it connects in your mind to John F. Kennedy.
Time and again, these men and women struggled and sacrificed and worked till their hands were raw so that we might live a better life. They saw America as bigger than the sum of our individual ambitions, greater than all the differences of birth or wealth or faction.
And so, Jeffrey, I don't know if I pulled the right clip there, but you found threads of JFK speeches in Obama's address.
Yeah, I think that in that passage, and that was the right clip, I think that there were traces of Obama really flipping into JFK's voice. It reminded me of Kennedy's lines about a shining city on a hill. It reminded me about the way that Kennedy spoke about service in his inaugural speech, that way that he called upon the country to once again reinvigorate themselves in a commitment to individual sacrifice, service for the greater good. And it really was a major, major theme in the run-up to Obama's inauguration, which he's since turned away from because of the economic policies that he's pushing, but I think he's going to come back to it. This notion that America is bigger than the sum of our individual ambitions, and that now is the time for us to stand up and ask what we can do in order to pitch in order to help. And I thought, you know, just kind of on a slightly humorous tone, if you actually read that section of Obama's speech in your best Kennedy impersonation, I think that it's pretty dead on for the type of rhetoric that Kennedy was using.
Mm-hmm. There's a little more from this same passage that also evokes Kennedy. Let's listen.
This is the journey we continue today. We remain the most prosperous, powerful nation on earth. Our workers are no less productive than when this crisis began. Our minds are no less inventive. Our goods and services no less needed than they were last week or last month or last year. Our capacity remains undiminished. But our time of standing pat, of protecting narrow interests and putting off unpleasant decisions, that time has surely passed. Starting today, we must pick ourselves up, dust ourselves off, and begin again the work of remaking America.
And I guess there's a little bit of a blend there, JFK, but also Franklin Delano Roosevelt, as he was championing the New Deal.
And also Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. That was the little reference there to, you know, a 1936 film, I think it's called Swing Time, where that song, Pick Yourself Up, Dust Yourself Off, and Start All Over Again, comes out. I thought that was the one kind of corny moment in Obama's speech when he had a long quote from that film. But what you see in that and what you hear in that moment is Obama reframing the economy in terms of work rather than finance. And it was the exact same challenge that FDR wanted to accomplish in his inaugural speech from 1933. You had a banking crisis that everybody was talking about, that no one would stop talking about. And FDR stands up and says, look, we have nothing to fear but fear itself. We don't have to be caught behind this trap of worrying about investing capital. We can simply get back to work. And it's that same message that I heard in that part of the speech, Obama's emphasis on work.
Mm-hmm. Jeffrey Feldman with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Let's take some calls. Ashley's on the line from Boston, listening on AM 1510, WWZN. Welcome, Ashley.
Thank you, Peter, and hello, Jeff. I've enjoyed your show. I think that you've hit many of the parts of the speech that I thought resonated the most. I should say by preface that I am a union organizer and a lefty progressive going way back, and so my criticisms of the speech are not so much in scope, in what he was talking about. But I'll tell you, you know, you say, first of all, the connection to Carter. What Carter didn't have that this speech had, and I remember the malaise speech, when I was a community organizer, what Carter's speech did not have was the linkage between the malaise, the recognition of what was true, with what could be, with the inspirational message. That coupling made this speech significantly different. I think. But here's what I thought was lacking. And I realized that by saying this, all inaugural speeches have been lacking, but I thought this one might be different, and it wasn't. And that was somewhat more specific call for what he wants us to do. You know, we've criticized Bush for not laying out the kind of sacrifices we as America were looking for him to ask of us when 9/11 happened. We say he didn't, you know, ask enough of us. He let us say, let's go back and drive and do whatever you do.
Shopping.
Right, exactly. Go shop. That's our response to 9/11. Here, I thought, all right, we're all inspired. Things are only going to get tougher for Obama when it comes to specific programmatic changes in our country. If ever there were a moment to say something specific about what he wants us to do in sacrifice, that was the time. And I was disappointed that he didn't say, I am asking for you to do X, Y, and Z. I am going to call for this. I am going to raise taxes. I am going to do whatever. And so that was my opinion.
All right. Jeffrey, what's your comment?
Well, thanks, Ashley, for the remark there. I think that the service theme in Obama's inauguration was undeveloped. It was undeveloped, and I agree there could have been more there. But what we're seeing now in the first week of the presidency is that he's already working through the top of the speech, almost like an outline for the legislative agenda that he has. And he's going right to the economic initiatives and right to the foreign policy initiatives, you know, sending someone to the Middle East, putting forward this huge, you know, stimulus package on public works. So I think what we will see in the next few days, if not the next few weeks, is that service idea filled out in which he will begin to tell us the specifics. And that seems to be his style of speaking in these big events.
Ashley, the other comments I would add are what you're looking for is more likely to appear in the State of the Union message, where a president offers specific legislative initiatives and goals. Also, I give him some benefit of the doubt that he is still figuring out just how deep a hole Bush left him, whether it is on the economic situation, the bailouts, and you know where that money has gone and whether it's been effective. And so I think in some ways he was being prudent of trying to really study the lay of the land before he offered things that were too broad or too bold. That said, I do want some broad statements and some bold statements. And I think that, you know, he set the tone by essentially repudiating the key aspects of the Bush administration and doing it in the understated way where he never had to mention Bush by name or even talk about the particular episodes where lines were crossed. He really restated his own views and values in a way that contrasted so sharply that it left no doubt that it was a rejection of all things Bush.
I agree, Peter. I think, though, it's overstating it to say that he was understated. I think that
okay.
he was very clear. He wasn't bombastic, but he was, I don't think, understated in the least. He was polite. He didn't say, mm-hmm. my predecessor got us into this hole, and I'm going to, with the help of this nation, get us out, by golly. He didn't say that, but he came just short of that. And maybe even there's some validity to the criticism that he could have spent a little more time rather than the brief comments he made reaching out the hand across the aisle. Although, practically speaking, all of that reaching across the aisle stuff, I think we will see in what happens over the next few months legislatively,
right.
how many compromises are made. But
yeah.
thank you again for your show, 1510 in Boston, and your show nationally is a nice voice in the wilderness of left-wing talk.
I mean, well, thank
really
you, Ashley.
There's a little out there, and I appreciate it, and I listen to it regularly.
Well, I'm glad you called. Can I reward you with a DVD?
Absolutely.
I've
never turned down free stuff.
I've got Murder, Spies, and...
I'll give my address to your producer.
Great. We'll send you a DVD of Murder, Spies, and Voting Lies, the Clint Curtis
Fantastic.
Story. All right? Thanks for your call today. And now to Jackie in Watsonville. Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show, Jackie.
Hi. I've been talking all day. Listen, President Obama, is so brilliant, and he has so much background, and he's really done his homework. Listen, he could have made, and he's also a brilliant speaker, he could have made any kind of a speech he wanted. I think what he wanted to do, he's already shown us that he's a great orator, okay? We don't need to be convinced of that. He gets up and he makes a speech that maybe was a little less erudite than the speeches he's made before. I don't think he got up there to try to convince us of who he is. We know who he is now. I think he wanted to set out something before us that was relatively simple but hard-hitting. And you're right about, he doesn't know what has gone on. He doesn't know what's hidden, what they've hidden away, and God knows what that is, you know. He hasn't found that out yet. And I think that he wanted to just lay it out as quickly as he could. This is the way it is. I'm going to do my best for you. And I know that he is. I think he's comfortable enough in his brilliance and I know he's got a high IQ. And I know he cares about us. I know that he does. And I think he's got character, okay? We're not used to having that. He's not trying to impress us. We know who he is already.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think he's trying to share with us his vision for America and for the world as far as that goes. I think he did a very good job. I was impressed because he wasn't trying to impress us.
Okay. Interesting. Jeffrey?
Well, it's an interesting point because one of the major themes that Obama wanted to float in the inauguration address was that we should move past ideology and just get down to pragmatic solutions. And he has that great statement where he says, the question is not, we should be debating is not whether government is good or bad for us, but simply what works. And I think that the basic message, let's get to work, is fundamentally dispassionate on some level. And I think that he was advancing that rather than going for some big ideological statement that people would repeat for generations.
Well, I agree with that. He did not really come across as an ideologue. He offered, real rational frames of what the problems are, what we need to do to address them, and that he's a pragmatist. And I think that does come across in many of the themes that he has sounded, including the post-partisanship, which I frankly don't think will stick, but I certainly understand what he's attempting to do, and I respect the effort. My feeling is that we see time after time that the Republicans are not willing to follow that lead. But I do think that the tone that he sounded and set in this speech is very appropriate and very conscious on his part. It's what he wanted to convey to us. And on that level, I think he was quite effective.
Yeah, I agree completely. And, you know, in terms of whether or not the Republicans are actually going to be postpartisan, I doubt that very, very much. But, you know, for the time being, his effort at being postpartisan is going to cause some confusion amongst the Republicans because they're no doubt having a debate as to how they should respond to that so that they don't become demonized by the press so that he can't get the upper hand. And if anything, it may not be that we have this postpartisan harmony, but there will be a more confused Republican Party than usual.
That's interesting. Jackie, thanks for your call today. Great to have you listening.
Sure.
All right. Take
Bye-bye.
Care. We'll take a break and return. One more segment with Jeffrey Feldman. A couple of more excerpts from the Obama inaugural. Your comments are welcome at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. The Peter B. Collins Show, produced in San Francisco by Katrina Rill. Visit our website. Grab a podcast, peterbcollins.com.
KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Good afternoon. This is Mrs. Sunshine with your KRXA 540 traffic and weather. We've got a traffic accident in Monterey, southbound Route 1, just north of Route 218. Also in Santa Cruz, southbound Route 1, just south of Morrissey Boulevard, an accident. Another accident at Damien at 101. Also, northbound 101, just south of Airport Boulevard, a traffic collision. And finally, in King City, a traffic accident, southbound 101 on County Route 17 off-ramp.
This is Billy Sunshine with your KRXA 540 weather. Today is partly cloudy with highs in low to middle 50s and lows tonight near freezing, so be careful. Tomorrow, sunshine with a slow warming trend over the week. Stick around for Peter B. Collins on 540 AM, where it's no coincidence we're at the extreme left side of the dial.
The patient's not responding to the treatment.
I know. That imaginary jingle telling him to go where again?
Coffeetopia.
I've seen this condition before. It is very contagious.
What happened?
Nothing really. Everyone had a cup of coffee and a bagel. Speaking of which, let's go have a cup.
Where should we go?
Coffee, coffee, coffeetopia.
What was that?
And so, it begins again.
For the best coffee, tea, or smoothies in the Monterey Bay Area, visit Coffeetopia. With three locations in Santa Cruz, 3701 Portola Drive near Pleasure Point, 1723 Mission Street on the west side, and the newest Coffeetopia at 1443 Capitola Road in the Live Oak area. Coffeetopia is also the oldest internet cafe in Santa Cruz, with wireless and by-the-minute computer stations. Other places use ice as fillers for their smoothies, but not Coffeetopia. They use all fruit and juices when making their delicious smoothies, and they also feature tropical, high-energy, acai smoothies, bagels, and fresh baked goods.
Coffee, coffee, Coffeetopia.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays, following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays, 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Wide open, Robinson for a three off the inbound. Two for two, Nyken Robinson. Four on three up the left side, Jamal Boykin in the open floor. Goes in and Viney and scores.
This is the voice of the Golden Bears, Roxy Bernstein, inviting you to join us for another exciting season of Cal basketball right here on your home for the Bears.
The Bears are on the bus to Southern California Thursday the 29th to meet UCLA. 7 p.m. pregame here on KRXA.
Obama, 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 Obama,
call him president, he's the next new president. He is senator from Illinois. Yeah, his criteria compared to John McCain, this isn't fair, cause he's BLAC, so the eyes are on.
That's Lil Wayne.
So he's right, legislation.
With the hip-hop welcome for President Barack Obama. Thank you, Little Wayne. We're talking with Jeffrey Feldman, and I recommend both his books to you. Framing the Debate takes a look at past presidential speeches, and Outright Barbarous is a look at the loaded language and framing used effectively by the Republicans over the last 8 years. And his website is frameshopisopen.com. That's frameshopisopen.com. Got two more clips here, one a little longer than the other, Jeffrey, and let's start with this one. This was Obama's reaching through the television, talking to the international community, and in particular, the Muslim world.
To the Muslim world, we seek a new way forward based on mutual interest and mutual respect. To those leaders around the globe who seek to sow conflict or or blame their society's ills on the West. Know that your people will judge you on what you can build, not what you destroy. To those who claim to power through corruption and deceit and the silencing of dissent, know that you are on the wrong side of history, but that we will extend a hand if you are willing to unclench your fist. To the people of four nations, we pledge to work alongside you to make your farms flourish and let clean waters flow, to nourish starved bodies and feed hungry minds. And to those nations like ours that enjoy relative plenty, we say we can no longer afford indifference to the suffering outside our borders, nor can we consume the world's resources without regard to effect. For the world has changed, and we must change with it.
And this clip in your online post, you say, is reminiscent of some of the themes of Lyndon Baines Johnson.
Yeah, the Great Society speech from 1964, in which Johnson, among other things, he talks specifically about the need to commit society to ending poverty. And it was a very bold statement by Barack Obama, reaching out beyond the borders of our country to say, look, whatever ideologies you may be pushing, what will improve your national situation is a concern with poverty, a concern with the basic necessities, a concern with education. All those themes of the Great Society almost sounded like the Great Society 2.0 for a global world rather than just the United States. I thought it was very reminiscent of Johnson.
Yeah. And the line about we will extend a hand if you're willing to unclench your fist, I think that's an image that really rises above language and communicates very effectively to disparate types of people.
It does. There's something quasi-biblical about that language. A lot of people have brought that to my attention, the notion of a very different United States now, one that doesn't go forward, obviously, with the military, but with the very basic idea of a handshake. That's a great iconic image of the American president reaching out. I think that he really did hit the money with that particular image.
He also helped me because I'm an unchurched guy, Jeffrey. I was raised a Catholic, and I don't participate any longer. And so he made a statement. I don't have the clip here, but we're a nation of Christians and Muslims, Jews and Hindus, and non-believers. And I have to say that just hearing a president utter that, because I'm so often offended by all of these gratuitous God bless America and God bless this and that, and so to acknowledge that there are those of us in this nation who are not Christians and who are not people for whom faith is the foremost priority, that really says a lot about his inclusiveness.
It's almost startlingly thoughtful, that phrase that he used. We're so used to not having that type of inclusive language come out of our president, particularly not in these very, very high-profile moments, that we're forced to pause in when we heard him say that. I was also struck by that line listening there, particularly following on the controversy that surrounded his inclusion of Rick Warren in the inauguration. But he is someone, Obama really seems to be someone who thinks seriously about these moments and puts himself into it and comes up with really amazing rhetorical solutions.
Yeah. Jeffrey, I lifted one other line because I've been very concerned about Obama's intention to put more American troops in Afghanistan. And finally, the media is starting to raise important questions about this, and I appreciate that from other sources. But he walked back a little bit. He modified his language. And it's only one line, and it goes by very quickly. So I encourage people to listen carefully to what he says. But it's a very different statement about Afghanistan than he made during the campaign.
We'll begin to responsibly leave Iraq to its people and forge a hard-earned peace in Afghanistan.
So forge a hard-earned peace in Afghanistan. That's very different from a military escalation. Now, he didn't back off from putting more troops there, but the purpose that he stated is much more acceptable to me than what he has articulated to date about putting more troops into Afghanistan and what the purpose is.
The saber rattling seems to have died down in this particular moment in the speech. Whether or not he sticks with that remains to be seen. I get the impression with
with Obama in terms of rhetoric, that he wants to, you know, to use a horrible cliche, speak softly and carry a big stick. And I think that he did, though, want to stay consistent with his theme of diplomacy in this particular speech.
Yeah. And we do have to acknowledge that the attacks in Pakistan and Afghanistan have continued since the change of the guard in Washington. The Predator drones have launched assaults in Pakistan, leading to loss of life. They claim civilians. We say they were legitimate targets. And we had another one of these episodes in Afghanistan just in the last few days. So it is interesting that the rhetoric is different. But so far, we're not seeing a different policy, at least not in those two narrow episodes that have been reported to date. Jeffrey, I've got about a minute remaining. What would you like to add here in terms of your overall sense of this address and what we'll think of it 4 or 8 years from now?
Well, I think there's one line, for the world has changed and we must change with it. I think that that's a line that really stuck out when I was listening to the speech because it went right back to the themes of the election. If any word, you know, two words, hope and change, would be associated with Barack Obama, and I thought that line was brilliant. But I think that most people will remember the inauguration as a pilgrimage, as having been there rather than having heard a speech. That's certainly how I'll remember it. But, you know, time will tell. We'll see which videos percolate up, and it'll be just a matter of years before that one iconic moment emerges.
Yeah. Well, Jeffrey, thank you for joining me today. I always appreciate your commentary, and I hope people will visit your website, frameshopisopen.com. And Framing the Debate is the book that discusses famous presidential speeches. I think it's quite relevant to this discussion, and I hope people will pick that up, too. Jeffrey Feldman, thanks again.
Thanks so much, Peter.
My pleasure. Coming up next, a live report from Chicago on the Blago mess, and then we open up the phone lines to hear from you in the free speech zone. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
Has your computer been slowing down? Are you having problems with your email? Or when you go to the internet, is your browser taking so long to load that it seems like the worldwide wait? I'm Luke Ford, CEO of My Computer Works. We help people just like you with computer problems you can't fix. With one easy call, we can help you get your computer working the way you want it, speeding it back up, making sure you can send and receive emails, and making the internet fun again. You'll speak to a U.S.-based technician who knows what they're doing, who can usually fix your computer on the very first call. If your computer's been slowing down, you can't get your email to work, your internet's taking forever, or if you're not sure what's wrong, but your computer's just not working the way you want it, call My Computer Works, and we'll help you fast.
Call My Computer Works right now, toll-free, 888-629-9618. Tell them Peter B. sent you, 888-629-9618. One more time, 888-629-9618.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney.
I, Timothy F. Geithner.
I, Timothy F. Geithner.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
With President Obama looking on, Vice President Biden swore in the new Treasury Secretary a few minutes ago. Tim Geithner won Senate confirmation late today on a vote of 60 to 34.
The Senate overlooked Tim Geithner's embarrassing failure to pay thousands of dollars in taxes and confirmed him as Treasury Secretary because, said Senate Leader Harry Reid, the economy's in crisis and he's the man to fix it.
No one, in my opinion, is more qualified or prepared with the task than Tim Geithner.
But the tax issue was too much for some Republicans and Iowa Democrat Tom Harkin, who asked how Geithner could be put in charge of the IRS.
Would his admonition be, do as I say, not as I do? That is not acceptable.
Congress has released another $350 billion to help shore up banks and other financial institutions. Geithner's first job as Treasury Secretary will be figuring out how to spend it. Bob Fuzz, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Another week, another wave of layoffs. Big companies including Caterpillar, Pfizer, and Home Depot announced job cuts today. CBS News correspondent Anthony Mason says the economy took a big hit.
Between U.S. companies and European companies, there were over 70,000 job cuts announced today. It's a global recession, and everybody is retrenching, and there are going to be more days like this.
At least until spring, the U.S. economy is expected to lose jobs at the rate of 500,000 a month. It's been a big day at Kaiser Permanente Hospital in Bellflower, California.
We are very delighted to say that 8 newborns are in stable condition and they're doing quite well.
Dr. Karen Maples was part of a team that helped a woman deliver octuplets, only the second set of octuplets ever born alive. A woman in Houston gave birth to 8 babies in 1998. The smallest died of heart and lung failure a week later, but the other 7 survived. They're 10 years old now.
What a difference 1 week makes in Washington, D.C.
California State Senator Fran Pavley is author of that state's clean air regulations. Today, President Obama rolled back a Bush administration policy, taking steps that could allow California and other states to impose tougher auto emission standards.
We know that the automobile manufacturers can meet these targets, the midterm targets, as well as the 2016 targets of 30% reduction of greenhouse gas emissions.
Mr. Obama also ordered new federal rules to require more fuel-efficient vehicles. Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich was absent as the state Senate opened his impeachment trial. Blagojevich chose to defend himself on ABC's The View.
I didn't do anything wrong. I'm not guilty of any criminal wrongdoing. All I asked for is a chance to be able to prove my innocence. And in the state Senate, if they let me bring a case and bring witnesses, I can prove my innocence.
Senate leaders insist the trial will be fair. On Wall Street, the Dow gained 38 points, closing at 81.16, the NASDAQ 12 points higher. This is CBS News.
Hi, I'm the foreman of a construction company. We just added Aflac as one of the benefits we provide for our employees. At no direct cost to the company, Aflac makes our foundation of benefits even stronger. My crew is so happy with Aflac, they're going on and on about it.
Hammer out the specifics. For more information, call 1-800-99-AFLAC or go to AFLACForBusiness.com. American Family Life Assurance Company of Columbus. Aflac.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. You know, there's never been a better time to own my new Orrick XL because now the Orrick you've always wanted has a new low price. The amazingly powerful, incredibly lightweight new Orrick XL starts at only $299. Try it risk-free for 30 days. If you don't love it, you don't keep it. Call 1-877-ORIC-21. That's 1-877-ORIC-21. Or visit ORIC.com to find the ORIC store closest to you.
It's believed that a collision with birds forced that U.S. Airways flight to splash down on the Hudson River. In the future, such accidents might be preventable.
It's being tested right now at Seattle-Tacoma Airport, an experimental radar system designed to spot bird flocks as far as 6 miles away.
It is working. We've actually been pretty impressed with it at this point, and now the experiment is actually going to be spread out to other airports throughout the country this year.
Perry Cooper at SeaTac. It's the kind of thing that might have enabled Flight 1549 to avoid that large flock of birds reportedly encountered after takeoff.
If they're talking about a situation where you had a flock of birds, that's really the ideal that this would hopefully detect.
The new radar is coming to Chicago O'Hare, Dallas-Fort Worth, and JFK. Jim Taylor, CBS News.
Police in Huntington, West Virginia say they had no trouble tracking down the guy who robbed a hot dog shop. As he fled with 50 or 60 bucks, he dropped a backpack that contained his mail. Officers simply went to the address and made an arrest. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
It's a different world out there today, so it's good to know there are some things you can count on, like the quality of a Honda. Honda has the most durable, long-lasting line of cars in its class, which is one reason Honda can continue to offer affordable leasing when some other auto manufacturers can't. Honda. Simple. Go to shophonda.com to build and price your own Accord. Durability based on longevity. Longevity based on Arlo Polk & Company U.S. Vehicles and Operation Registration Statistics 1988 through 2007 for Honda and competing models.
So the other morning, I get an email from Moe's, my absolute favorite deli, whose pastrami I would actually kill for, which is probably why I gave him my email in the first place. Anyway, I'm like, wow, Moe's sending emails with coupons and photos? I want to bite my computer screen. Then it hits me. Eggs and pastrami hash for breakfast.
Email marketing from ConstantContact.com helps showcase your business, just like Mo. There's even free phone support with real live people. Get a free 60-day trial at ConstantContact.com.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Peter B. Collins!
We take
take you now to Chicago, that toddling town on the shores of Lake Michigan, where Rod Blagojevich is still the governor, kinda.
When you're young and so in love as we, and bewildered by the world we see, why do people hurt us so? Only those in love will know what a town without pity can do.
How about a state without pity, huh? How about a nation without pity? Dick Kay has been covering Chicago politics for 38 years, if anybody's counting. He's retired from NBC Television, where he was their chief political reporter for many, many moons. Dick, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Peter.
I'm glad I don't have to pay you for this, because we'd be into residuals by now.
That's all right.
So I just got the latest update, and I didn't know that Oprah had been in the running for the Senate seat in Illinois.
Neither did Oprah. She said she usually watches The View on her exercise cycle, and she said she would have fallen off if she'd known it.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, why does she want to be a senator from Illinois when she already owns half the country?
It would be a step down for her, both in pay
down.
And duties.
Heavens to Betsy, you don't want to do that.
Now, what the hell is Blago doing, to the extent that you can tell us?
I tell you, I mean, I want to laugh and I want to cry at the same time. I mean, it is funny and it is sad. I mean, he's out there today making the rounds. He's not in Chicago, of course. He's in New York. And he's on Good Morning America. He was on The View. He's on Access Hollywood. He's on Nightline. And he's on Larry King Live shortly. He's making the rounds because the Illinois Senate started the impeachment trial today. And, my God, he compared himself. I guess it means he knows he's going to jail because he said he thought about Mahatma Gandhi and Martin Luther King and Nelson Mandela, all of whom have gone to jail or had gone to jail at one time or another. And although they emerged as leaders, I think this is the reverse. I think this is a leader who's eventually going to go to jail.
And what about that incoherent cowboy analogy last week?
You know, to be honest with you, I've tried to be fair and objective in all of this, and I have just thrown up my hands. I mean, he's a cowboy. He's using that. It's not the first time. He talked about being a new sheriff in town one time. I mean, he loves the movies. He sees himself in these movie roles, you know, Mr. Smith goes to Washington, and he's there's a method behind this madness. The Senate started its impeachment trial today. That's not a criminal trial. Civil rules of evidence don't apply. It's pure politics, and that doesn't matter. Evidence doesn't matter in that. What matters is the votes in that. And they're going to throw him out of office probably by the end of the week.
Uh-huh.
But he's out there. I think he knows he's going to be indicted by a federal grand jury in the next 2 weeks. Two months.
Fitzgerald,
maybe a little more.
Does Fitzgerald have a current grand jury in session?
Yes, he does.
Okay.
He went to about 2 weeks ago. After he filed criminal charges and arrested the governor, then he went to the judge and said, you need to give me 90 more days to complete this case against the governor. And the judge granted 90 more days. Fitzgerald has convened a grand jury. He's got all kinds of witnesses coming through the door now that the governor's been indicted. And I think what the governor is doing, quite frankly, is appealing to the jury pool. People who are going to be sitting on a federal jury when he's indicted and brought before a judge and on federal charges.
So he figures there'll be a bunch of Oprah viewers in the jury court.
There you go. There you go. I mean, you know, look, he's touched all bases, hasn't he? Gandhi, Martin Luther King, Nelson Mandela, Oprah. But that's what he's doing. I mean, put aside what's happening in the Senate, he all but admitted today that he'll be out of office by the end of this week, or maybe the first of next week. He knows he's gone. He knows he's out of office. But they've been talking about impeachment here for, I think, for at least a year, off and on.
Has he seen any of those movies about the Bourne, B-O-U-R-E, B-O-U-R-N-E, the guys, he's always on the run?
Let me tell you something.
From his government?
This guy has probably seen every movie. I mean, he loves movies. When he was out raising funds and trying to get health care, and when he put in a tax incentive to bring movies to Chicago, he was out hobnobbing in Hollywood, and one of the guys he loves is Stallone. Maybe he sees himself as Rocky.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe he thinks he's going to emerge as the winner, you know, in all of this. But I think he's not a dumb man. I mean, there's a method to going out to the media center of the world and talking to everyone in America about how put upon he is. It will be interesting to see what happens when a federal jury is convened and when he does go to trial. It may take a while. You know, he may have to do this all over again, but it will be very interesting to see if he's made any converts in the jury.
Now, Dick Kaye, one of the things that I thought he and his legal team might do would be to try to use the impeachment process to get some witnesses on the record
in
ways that would complicate Patrick Fitzgerald's investigation later.
That's what they wanted to do. I mean, Rod Blagojevich wanted to call because they talked to him about selling the Senate seat. That seems to be the most startling charge. I mean, I've always had problem with that charge. There are lots of others in this impeachment case down in Springfield. Selling the Senate seat, I don't know if I believe that that's not just a matter of semantics, although there are some questionable conversations on those federal tapes. But I think that he wanted to get Rahm Emanuel, Valerie Jarrett, Jesse Jackson Jr., and a few others to come before the Senate and say, as Rahm Emanuel did on Meet the Press, I didn't get the sense that Rod Blagojevich was trying to seek anything in exchange for the Senate seat and put a dent in Fitzgerald's federal grand jury investigation and subsequent trial. I think that's what he's trying to do. But Fitzgerald said, no, to the Illinois Senate, do not call these people, because that will damage our case against the governor when he is indicted. So, I mean, but in a sense, part of it is unfair to the governor. I mean, that part of it is unfair. You can't bring in those people who say they don't think he did anything wrong. Then why go before the Illinois Senate? Why face it? And, you know, part of his legal team resigned.
Yeah, why did that happen?
Well, I think they don't like his media blitz. I know Ed Jensen. I've known Ed Jensen, who was his chief defense attorney for a very long time. I think Jensen has a strategy. He always does have a strategy. He's been very effective. He's the guy that got R. Kelly off. And I think R. Kelly kept his mouth shut. And I think Jensen would have preferred that the governor keep his mouth shut. Because it was Jensen who was doing the talking and saying the impeachment trial is a lynching. And Blago went out and hired a PR agency, the same PR agency, by the way, who represents Drew Peterson here, the suburban cop whose wife has disappeared.
Yeah, more than one, right?
One died, and now they reopened that case, and the other one has disappeared.
Yeah. So if you can help me with the sequence of events here, Jensen quit after what? What provoked that? He's continuing to represent Blagojevich in the criminal case.
No, he's not.
Oh, really?
He has completely resigned. Rod Blagojevich had Ed Jensen, Sam Adam Jr., and Sheldon Skoronski. Last week, about Friday, Ed Jensen, when Rod Blagojevich started doing that round of media interviews here in Chicago,
yeah,
Jensen quit. And Jensen said, I don't expect people to do everything I tell them, but I expect them to listen to me. And apparently he didn't listen. He went on the media blitz. He hired the PR agency, and he's off and running. And he lost a very good defense attorney, frankly, and Jensen was going to represent him in the criminal case, but not the impeachment proceeding, and now that's all changed. He's left with Sam Adams Jr., who, by the way, his father, Sam Adams, is with him, and he's a very good criminal defense attorney, too.
Uh-huh.
But that's what they are. They're criminal defense attorneys.
So, and Adam, father and son, are handling the impeachment, too?
No, nobody's handling the impeachment.
Really? They just are no-show
Rod
completely?
Rod boycotted the impeachment. They said this is going to be a lynching. He can't present the witnesses he needs to present. It's an unfair trial. Well, it's a political trial. What do they expect? There's no fairness in Chicago politics.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, but wouldn't it make sense for him to at least have an attorney there to raise those objections and
put that into the record? I mean, what's he going to do? I mean, they've taken their case to the media. They're not going to go down. They know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a chance. When politicians in Illinois, the leader of the House, the Speaker of the House, and all the others start talking about impeaching the governor before any of this criminal, any of these criminal complaints took place, when they're talking about that as far back as October or November, you know what the conclusion's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's out. He's going to be out. He's done. It's very embarrassing for Illinois. It's a sad state of affairs because here's the guy who was the first Democrat in, I think, 27 years. He had a bright future. He's first generation, I believe, is he Serb or Albanian? I can't remember.
Serbian? Yeah, he's Serbian.
His father worked in the steel mills. His mother worked for the Chicago Transit Authority, and he rises all the way to governor. He wants to be a populist. The problem is he not only wants to be governor, he wants to be president.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants big, bold programs, and that's what got him in trouble. Because, you know, he ignored the first rule of Chicago politics. You remember, we don't want nobody, nobody sent. Don't make no waves, don't back no losers, you know. And he tried to go around the political leaders in the state.
We got to take a break. We'll continue with Dick Kaye from Chicago. If you got a question about the Blago saga, call us now, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372, The Peter B. Collins Show.
I used to think that I could not go on.
You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Hi, this is Cynthia.
And this is Paul at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore.
Have you heard about the events at Pilgrim's Way in the Secret Garden? Maybe too late? Our events include workshops, lectures, and book signings by recognizable and well-known authors locally, nationally, and internationally on a wide range of topics.
Don't miss another chance. You can receive Pilgrim's Way event announcements personally by going to pilgrimsway.com and click on Events to subscribe to the private email service listed. An event calendar is also posted on the Pilgrim's Way community bulletin board inside the bookstore for your convenience. Support independence. Come in and pick up a free KRXA bumper sticker. We're on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in downtown Carmel.
Or give us a call at 624-4955.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, inexpensive Mandarin and Cantonese food prepared to order every day. The May family invites you to savor their authentic Chinese dishes and tasty soups like congee and wonton noodle. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.75 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget Jim's is tops for takeout and catering too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
Sun Street Centers now offers low-cost transitional housing for men in sobriety. Simply maintain a program of recovery and have 30 days of sobriety to qualify. These apartments are fully furnished with a large kitchen, living room, dining area, cable TV, and laundry. Sun Street is now taking applicants. Seven Suns Transitional Housing for Men with a sincere commitment to their recovery at a low cost. Call 753-5145, 753-5145 to apply. Sun Street Centers in Salinas.
Good afternoon. This is Mrs. Sunshine with your KRXA 540 traffic and weather update. It's looking pretty good out there for your afternoon commute. We do have a traffic collision on northbound 101 just south of Airport Boulevard. And also on Damien at 101 in Salinas, there is a vehicle partly in the westbound lane of Damien. And finally, there is an animal on the road, actually two, looks like a couple of goats, wandering loose near the road in Moss Landing on Route 1 at Struve Road South. So heads up for those.
This is Billy Sunshine with your KRXA 540 weather. Tonight, mostly dark, with lows near freezing. Tomorrow, sunshine, with a warming trend for the rest of the week. Stick around for Peter B. Collins. On AM 540, where it's no coincidence with the extreme left side of the dial.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Phone lines are open. We'll go to the free speech zone at the bottom of the hour. You can comment on any subject, from any viewpoint, from anywhere within the sound of my voice. The toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. We continue with our update from Chicago on the Illinois story. Rod Blagojevich is in the process of being impeached, and he's in New York appearing on network television shows and just boycotting the whole thing. Here's a quote from Blagojevich. I'm an innocent man who has not done anything wrong. And when you're wrongfully accused and you're not given the chance to properly defend yourself, for me to resign would be to admit that I did something wrong, which I did not do. Now, Dick, I have advocated for people who are truly innocent and who are incarcerated in prison despite that. And frankly, he doesn't quite meet the test.
Well, Peter, he's innocent till he's proven guilty. I mean, let's face it. And that's what we're going to find out in the federal trial after he's indicted. I've said, you know, before that the impeachment trial is politics, yeah, and pure politics. There's no legal way around it. It's a political matter. It's legislative branch, and no court's going to step in, and they haven't asked a court to do that. There are so many charges against him politically, and there are probably going to be a lot more charges against him with the grand jury. A lot of it's going to be conspiracy, mm-hmm, and a lot of it will deal with his political fund and fundraising activities. I mean, they're going to charge him with seeking contributions or payoffs, if you will, in exchange for contracts, in exchange for appointments to boards and commissions, in exchange for slicing up investments in the teacher's pension fund to a variety of brokers who wanted a piece of it. And in this, even in this latest charge, the criminal complaint, he's accused of wanting something for himself. He wanted a job with the union organization. Mm-hmm. He wanted a high-paying job, it is said, for his wife, Patty. who, by the way, just got fired from a $100,000 a year job. He wanted contributions from a tow-away contractor in exchange for increasing his tow-away contracts. Those are charges that have nothing to do with this selling the Senate seat, right, if you will. And, mm-hmm. I think you're right. I mean, I think his claim of innocence, that'll have to be decided by a jury. You'll
yeah.
have to wait until the indictment.
And Dick, you know, it reminds me of the political circus we had here in California. Gray Davis was not accused of any crimes,
right,
but he was dead in the water politically.
Right.
And when Schwarzenegger entered the race, it was over. And the Democrats acted like they could withstand this, and, you know, they urged us to vote for a really weak lieutenant governor
yeah.
candidate. And, you know, I feel the die is cast in the same way. And
the problem for Blagojevich, though, Peter, is that even his own Democratic Party is behind this impeachment.
Sure.
They want him out.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a guy named Pat Quinn, who's the lieutenant governor. I mean, this guy is a showboater. He hasn't spoken to the governor since 2007. I mean, the governor has all kinds of strikes against him in his own political party.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's going to be fascinating to see, and we will watch to see if your prediction that he'll be impeached and out of office by the end of this week. I have no reason to doubt that. And then the next step is on to a federal trial under Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald. So we're going to have a lot of Blago to go around in 2009, I guess, Dick.
Well, consider this, real quick. I know you're short on time, but consider this. We have a Speaker of the House named Michael Madigan. He never did get along with the governor. His daughter is the Attorney General. She wants to run for governor. The Speaker wants to help her. The only guy who was on Blagojevich's side was the President of the Illinois Senate, Emil Jones. Emil Jones has since retired. There's the new President of the Senate mm-hmm. who's not interested in helping Blagojevich.
Dick, I got to stop there. He's a man without friends. Thanks for your
everywhere.
Your coverage. I really appreciate it.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself. Does it seem like the service is lacking at most service stations? Not at Mid-Valley Valero and Shell on Carmel Valley Road. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell offer complete auto repair, smog inspections, major brand tires, 30, 60, and 90,000 mile service checks, complete brake work, and fix any electrical problems. They even provide environmentally friendly auto detailing. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell use only the highest quality original and aftermarket auto parts. Call Mid-Valley Valero and Shell at 831-624-0722. That's 624-0722. Remember, for all your automobile needs, only Mid-Valley Valero and Shell will do. Locally owned, Mid-Valley Valero and Shell, putting the service back in service stations. Looking for a big city dining experience with local ma-and-pa prices and service? Look no further than Jim's American Chinese Restaurant at 8069 San Miguel Canyon Road, Prunedale, just behind Burger King. Stephen Lowe, master chef and co-owner of Jim's American Chinese Restaurant, brings to Prunedale his 35 years of experience in cosmopolitan San Francisco. Stephen serves traditional American and Chinese dishes with subtle, delicious French and Italian influences. Jim's has great meals for $10 to $15. For extraordinary food to die for and prices that won't dent your budget, make it a point to visit Jim's American Chinese Restaurant in Prunedale. Jim's is open Monday through Saturday, 11 to 9, and Sundays, noon to 9. At Jim's, you can dine in or take out. And catering is also available. Call 663-4888. That's 663-4888. To make reservations at Jim's American Chinese Restaurant, call 663-4888.
Just because gas prices are low doesn't mean our troubles are over. Mother Nature's getting hot under the collar, our economy is in the toilet, and we're spending billions overseas to fill our tanks. Both kinds. Did you know local people have sold locally made fuel on the Central Coast since 2002? At the Green Station, our biodiesel is ASTM approved and is made from restaurant fryer oil collected right here. Did you know that electric cars were first built in the 1830s? Almost 200 years later, and our government still has plenty of money for oil wars, but not enough to jumpstart our renewable energy economy. 70% of all car trips in America can be done in a neighborhood electric vehicle. This will help save our planet and save you money. Zen neighborhood electric cars are at the Green Station now, and they can be charged by the sun. From local biodiesel to electric cars, bikes, and scooters, renewable transportation and a more peaceful world are just a call away. Call the Green Station today in Santa Cruz at 831-425-9100. Major credit cards are now accepted. That's 831-425-9100. Again, that's 831-425-9100.
Cornerstone Wellness Center in Monterey specializes in reducing stress and pain in your body. With six professionals, Cornerstone offers hormone balancing for men and women, all natural, no side effects. With our bodies filled with toxins and aches and pains, this approach works. I'm Sheila Gale, and I've lived with chronic neck pain for years. Trina Hammack uses a technique called quantum biofeedback, which to me is a miracle. I feel better and better each day, physically and mentally. Cornerstone offers lymphatic drainage, infrared saunas, ionic foot baths, massage, estheticians, and body strengthening specifically for your body so you'll start living pain-free naturally. Tired of taking medicine? Homeopathy and top-of-the-line essential oils are used. Finally, an alternative that works. Cornerstone Wellness Center, 1088 Cass Street, Monterey. Call today, 373-6204, 373-6204, or go to cornerstonewellnesscenter.com.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from the dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
It's the Free Speech Zone on the Peter B. Collins Show. All my lines are open for you right now, so call in toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. Did you hear the big news today? John Conyers issued a subpoena with eight letters on it. K-A-R-L-R-O-V-E. Karl Rove is supposed to testify a week from today.
Brother's got his name to keep me coming around. In the middle of our street, our house. In the middle of our house, it has a crowd. There's always something happening, and it's usually quite loud.
Well, let's get our house in order. The House of Representatives, the Judiciary Committee, Chairman John Conyers, did issue a subpoena today calling on Karl Rove to report 1 week from today, February 2nd, to testify. Now, from everything I know, this is about the U.S. attorney scandal. And while you've heard me criticize Pelosi and others on this program for their weak appetite for investigation and accountability, I'm pleased that Pelosi sounded a different tone when it comes to the politicization and corruption at the Justice Department. I don't really know why she thinks that's actionable, but Bush's illegal wiretapping wasn't. But I'll take it. Because if Karl Rove does show up to testify, and if the members of the Judiciary Committee are properly prepared, and they ask him the right questions, and he actually tells the truth, it could crack open many of the scandals of the Bush administration. We could find out about the missing emails. We could find out about stolen elections. We could find out about the political persecution and prosecution of Don Siegelman in Alabama. That involves a stolen election and corrupt U.S. attorneys with ties to Karl Rove. And so I do see it as, pick your metaphor, a tip of the iceberg. And I applaud Conyers for taking this step. Now, of course, we know that with a Democratic president in the White House, we're not going to hear a phony claim of executive privilege, and we won't see a flurry of court actions to delay or block the response to this subpoena. So the ball's in Karl Rove's court, and I think it's going to be very interesting to see what transpires over the next week. And if he leaves the country for a meeting with the president of Georgia, so that he can say, oh, sorry, I just can't be there on February 2nd. So I'm encouraged by this. Want to hear your thoughts about it. 888-5, Peter B. is our toll-free number. All the line, well, one line is taken now, but there are four lines available for you. 888-573-8372. I apologize for the cough and the cold. I picked it up over the weekend. Poor judgment on my part. Kathy had it last week, and I kissed her too soon. Oh, I'm going to pay for it. One other thing I want to mention. On Friday's program, Temple Grandin was with us, and I really enjoyed that half hour. And I used the opportunity for personal reasons. I've got this new puppy. You may have heard him barking in the background today. We're trying to train him, but it's early. His name's Rocky. And so I invited Temple Grandin on the show so that I could ask her some questions about how to train my new pet. And, you know, you heard me, if you listened and caught that portion of the show, you heard me talking about some of the issues that we've been facing and how to keep him from barking and how to discipline him and that sort of thing. Well, unfortunately, I did a mass delete of a bunch of emails in my spam folder, and I lost one of them that came in on Friday. And if you're listening and you're the person who sent it, I ask you to resend your email. It was called The Cult of Dogs. And it was a blistering attack on me for adopting a puppy. And there were 10 different areas. I can't recall them all. But the complaints were that dogs eat food that starving humans should be fed. That they bite. Well, I know about that. I've got some chopped wires to prove it. That they spread disease, and it was this whole screed against dogs. And frankly, I was surprised. It came from Eureka, and I consider Eureka to be a pet-friendly town. I mean, when I've visited there, I've seen a lot of people with their critters around. And so if you were the person who sent that, you're welcome to call into the show and expand on your thoughts. Or if you resend the email, I'll bring it up in a free speech zone later this week and let people chew on it, if you don't mind that phrase. But frankly, I'm happy to have a dog. It's been a long time for me. And I really enjoy the companionship and the fact that he doesn't talk back. He does bark when I don't want him to, but he doesn't really fight me. And, you know, humans need that sometimes. There's too much resistance in our daily lives. So if you've experienced this, people who are very aggressively against pets, and you have a comment on that, feel free to give me a call. And if you sent me the Cult of Dogs email, please resend it and feel free to call in and we'll have an honest discussion. I will not sick my 6.5-pound dog on you. I promise. Here is Brian, who's calling in from New Hampshire, and I know that Casper is by his side. Hello, Brian.
Hi, how are you, Peter? Yeah, that, I believe all dogs go to heaven, that all good dogs go to heaven, and that means all dogs go to heaven. Basically, the only, or even a rabid dog, things like that, or the dog that's been overly trained to be overly aggressive, that's usually the part of the owner or the, you know, right. the dog that's overdone the aggressive nature of dogs, and that's the wrong part about it. But you did talk earlier today about, just before, I believe it was during your first hour, about what happened in the 20-day Israeli offensive in Gaza there.
Right.
It was some poor Palestinian woman there in Gaza, she mother of 10 children, and the some group of Israelis, allegedly this happened, I don't know if you've confirmed it or not, that some group of Israeli soldiers told us she's going to only be allowed to have 5 of those kids be allowed to live, and they were going to kill the other 5, and they were going to choose, or she had to choose them. And that sounds a lot like the movie Sophie's Choice, you know, starring
yeah.
Meryl Streep.
Yes, it does.
She played a Polish Catholic woman who had at this death camp, and the Poles were in the Slavic people were being killed off by the Nazis too, after they had virtually gotten every Jew killed off that they could get their hands on. The God love them.
I saw the film. It was very powerful. And, I have to be very clear, and I'm going to repeat this for the benefit of people who weren't listening in the first hour.
Okay.
We were talking with Dr. Sonia Robbins, who is a British medical doctor. We spoke to her about 3 weeks ago when she was at the Rafah border crossing between Egypt and Gaza. She was denied entry, and she was trying to get in for humanitarian reasons to treat the wounded.
Right.
And so she tried another route. She took one of the Free Gaza Movement's boats. when it left Cyprus, and they were stopped by Israeli gunboats in international waters about, I believe, 6 to 8 miles off the coast of Gaza. And so she then went back to the ground route and ultimately 1 week ago was admitted through the Rafah border crossing from Egypt. Now, she was unable to confirm or deny the report that I got by email, and I want to be clear about where it came from and who the author is. It was sent to me by Anna Baltzer. Anna is an American Jewish woman who has written a book about the plight of the Palestinian people, and she is in Beirut. She forwarded an email from there.
Right.
She had gotten a report from a cohort of hers. Her name is Barbara Lubin. And Lubin is the founder of the Middle East Children's Alliance. So, I want you to know that I have complete confidence in Anna Baltzer.
Right.
And in turn, her confidence in Barbara Lubin is meaningful to me. However, this so far is an unconfirmed report.
Okay.
And I want to put it in that honest frame.
Right. But
Go ahead.
Whatever it becomes of this, these allegations of this story, the whole thing is I believe many war crimes have occurred in the offensive against Gaza by the Israeli Defense Force, which is kind of an ironic statement of what they've done to the isolated, one of the most densely populated places on earth is the Gaza Strip.
Yeah.
It's just horrible. But we cannot, as Americans, you know, the sad thing, Peter, is that the Palestinian people are the fellow Semitic people and culture of the great Jewish people, you know, and there were Jewish people going back thousands of years before there was anything like Christians or Muslims in that part of the world. And, of course, Israel has a right to its existence, of course. But it's just that what has happened now, this dehumanization of, it's a new anti-Semitism, I call it, towards Arab people and American troops have practiced it in Iraq.
Well, one of the Israeli military officials used the term Shoah toward Hamas.
Yeah.
And Shoah is the extermination that was applied to the Jewish people in Europe.
But the Israeli intelligence services invented Hamas. They helped create it to be against the more secular
Fatah and the PLO.
PLO of Arafat.
Yes, that is an important historical point. So let me read this. It's a single paragraph. Out of all the devastation I've seen so far, there is one story in particular I think the world needs to hear. I met a mother who was at home with her 10 children when Israeli soldiers entered the house. The soldiers told her she had to choose 5 of her children to give as a gift to Israel. As she screamed in horror, they repeated the demand and told her she could choose or they would choose for her. Then these soldiers murdered 5 of her children in front of her. And this is a Jewish woman, Barbara Lubin, who makes this comment in her voice. The concept of, quote, Jewish morality, end quote, is truly dead. We can be fascist terrorists and Nazis just like everybody else. Now, contrast that with the statements of Ehud Olmert over the weekend, the embattled and corrupt Israeli prime minister who's in his final days. He said that Israeli troops operate at the highest ethical level. And he accused those of us who have raised charges, including war crime charges about Israel's recent activities in Gaza, as people who are doing moral gymnastics.
And in effect, he's trying to politely say that we're anti-Semites, too, again, the traditional sense of anti-Semitism against Jewish people.
Or that we are immoral in trying to identify atrocities that appear to have been committed by Israel here, and that by criticizing Israel, that we are immoral, amoral, or, you know, we're morally committing gymnastics, to use his term. And I'm sorry, that shows a great deal of denial. And it is compounded, Brian, by the U.S. resolution, and Maxine Waters was on with us last week on Inauguration Day, and she pointed out that she was one of 5 members of the House who voted against the AIPAC-sponsored resolution, which calls this an act of self-defense on the part of Israel. Now, there are a lot of different ways to describe this, and depending on where you start with what date and what provocation, you could build a case that Hamas was sending rockets into Israel It's very clear to me that Israel broke the ceasefire on our election day, November 4th, but in the corporate media and in the views of most members of Congress, it was Hamas that violated the ceasefire. That's the way they tell that story.
Israel's own spokesman said that before an interview. I believe some BBC guy or somebody was interviewing him, and he admitted that the Israeli military broke the truce.
And I believe that's Mark Regev, who is the official spokesman for the Israeli military.
Right.
So, you know, it is amazing the silence coming from Americans and even Barack Obama, who made his first call to Fatah's leader, Abu Mazen. He has really recited much of the boilerplate of blind support for Israel and an unwillingness to call it as we see it. And most importantly, what I would like Obama to repudiate is the idea of a preemptive strike. That Israel has the right to go in and kill innocent civilians, women and children in Gaza, rip the place up, blow it up, and, you know, the one thing that I can justify is that where they went to dig out tunnels and expose and break those up, that seems to be a rational, practical act.
Yeah.
But to drop white phosphorus on a school, on the very final day of the hostilities, when you're getting ready to call a one-sided ceasefire anyway, to bomb the UN complex where humanitarian aid and food supplies are being stored, and this is clearly a neutral zone. These are, you know, events that cry out for criticism from the United States and investigation by the world.
They're horrible war crimes, but also you have to remember that George W. Bush and the assault on Fallujah right after that November 2004 election, they used phosphorus apparently in Fallujah, and it's a hideous weapon. It should be a war crime to use such a, it's not really a weapon, it's a torture device of a kind of sick.
Well, it does have a legal use, which is to illuminate the sky for nighttime attacks.
People in their skin, right? They can't.
Right. Yeah. And it also,
they could burn alive.
To use it in a populated area is clearly a violation of international law. And Israel is in denial about that, and the U.S. is backing them up. And I'm embarrassed by that. Brian, I got to run to a break. I really appreciate your call. Right. Say hi to Casper for me.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. We'll take a break and return. Ted's on the line. We'll get his point of view in a moment. And I've got an update for people who are seeking the truth about 9/11. If you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, I want to tell you about an event coming up this Friday night. You're invited, and it's free. The details are next here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Mrs. Sunshine with your KRXA 540 AM traffic and weather report. There's a traffic collision with no injuries at Damien at 101 over in Salinas. Also, a couple of goats near the road running loose on State Route 1 and Struve Road South. That's near Moss Landing. CHP units are en route. And we've just had report of a brush fire on Route 152 just east of Casa de Fruta Parkway. So if you're in that area, take care. And now, on to the weather.
This is Billy Sunshine with your KRXA 540 weather. Tonight, mostly dark, with lows near freezing. Tomorrow, sunshine, with a warming trend for the rest of the week. Stick around for Peter B. Collins on AM 540, where it's no coincidence with the extreme left side of the dial.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays, 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Cruz. Come listen to the new Jennifer Cruz Show, Saturdays at noon, where we will get into it, I-N-T-U-I-T. We'll talk about intuition, emotions, and passions, all the invisible aspects of each and every one of us that nobody talks about. The Jennifer Cruz Show is made possible by Weiland Galleries in Carmel and Water Me Well Inner Healing Apparel. Visit watermewell.com. See you Saturdays at noon on the new Jennifer Cruz Show. Remember, Saturdays at noon, only on AM 540. Get into it.
Hi, this is Hal, and you're listening to KRXA 540. Just wanted to let you know about some of our recent schedule changes. First of all, we are playing basketball from Cal State Monterey Bay and Cal Berkeley this year. So if your favorite program is interrupted, we apologize, but you can catch all of our talk shows in full on the internet at their regularly scheduled times at KRXA540.com. In addition, we are now playing Ed Schultz live from 10 to noon. We play the first hour of Ed 8 to 9 p.m., and we play the entire Tom Hartman show 9 to midnight, Monday through Friday, with the exception of Thursday, when we start Tom Hartman's show at 11 in the evening and run it through 2 in the morning. Thank you so much for listening to KRXA 540 and on the internet at KRXA540.com.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm your humble host, Peter B., 8 minutes in front of the hour. I'm one of those people who doesn't believe what we've been told about September 11th, 2001. I don't have confidence in the work of the 9/11 Commission, and I witnessed its efforts a couple of days at my own expense in Washington back in 2004. And if you share my skepticism, we don't have to know what actually happened to know that the official story is riddled with errors. And probably lies. The physical evidence does not square with the theories and stories that we've been told about any of the sites, the World Trade Centers, Pennsylvania, or the Pentagon. And two people who have led the fight to find out the truth about 9/11 will be in the Bay Area this Friday. They are Richard Gage from Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. He's been on our program many times. He is very lucid. He confines himself to physical evidence and the facts, and I regard him as an excellent source on these issues. The website there is ae911truth.org. Also, he will be appearing on Friday night at Olney Hall at the College of Marin here in Marin County, and it's January 30th, Friday. And appearing with Richard Gage will be Dylan Avery. He is the young man who led the team that produced Loose Change 9/11. And while it's not perfect, it does an incredible job of skewering the official story. And it uses various clever animation sequences to prove that, for example, the story of a plane being flown into the Pentagon simply doesn't measure up to very careful critical analysis. So Loose Change, the final edition, is going to be screened at Olney Hall Friday night, College of Marin. And as I said, admission is free. I'm going to be there, and I invite you to join us. I think it's going to be a very interesting event, and we will feature Richard Gage and Dylan Avery on Friday's program. They'll be on in the second hour at 4 o'clock Pacific time. Ted in Salinas, thanks for calling the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi.
Hi, Ted.
I haven't called in a long time. Long time ago I called. I was just listening to your talk about 9/11. I was curious how they came up with these 19 hijackers, and I read the 9/11 report. It seems from the 9/11 report that they seem to think they know who they were because they had many of them under surveillance beforehand, which seems kind of curious that they would know that they were going to do this enough to know who they were. But that's not really the topic I called on. That was just what you were talking about.
All right. Go ahead, Ted.
The topic I wanted was, it seems to me that the United States and Israel are very sophisticated countries. We have a great deal of wealth. We have knowledge, supposedly. The fact that we can't establish and help the Palestinians establish themselves in the Middle East and establish peace, and the only thing we seem to be able to do is just provide more weaponry and more money for weapons, and both the United States and Israel seem to be guilty of bombing women and children and killing them, innocent people. But we're kind of in this kind of strange tryst with Israel where we're actually supporting and committing war crimes. And I find when you talk about morality, the basic issue is, why are we killing women and children? There isn't any other questions about morality that I see beyond that.
Well, and to use F-16 fighter jets and to send ground forces with tanks into a highly populated prison camp like Gaza, you know that you're going to have significant civilian casualties. And it appears go ahead.
And the United States to be really responsible world citizens and start establishing real peace. And this means that the people in Gaza have to have a way to make a living, and they have to have access to water, and they have to be able to trade with the countries around them. They can't be, it's like we're set. This whole thing is a big setup. It's like if you've ever seen the picture Beetlejuice.
Sure, I saw that.
They're always playing around with the model. Like they look at the model of themselves doing all this inside the model, and Beetlejuice kicks over the tree, and it's like this. We have this kind of strange model called Israel and Palestine that we're just kind of sadistically playing with.
Well, we've made some deals with the devil, where we've supported Israel, they've supported us. They haven't really called us out for our atrocities in the occupation of Iraq. And so we back them up when they make these kind of invasive moves in Gaza. So my bottom line is that every human life has the same value. And these political calculations don't address that. They basically say that an American life is worth more than an Iraqi's, and that an Israeli life is worth more than a Palestinian's by a ratio of 100-1. I can't accept that. And I have to speak out against occupation and against the massacre, the slaughter of innocent human beings. Thanks for listening today.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you.
Has your computer been slowing down? Are you having problems with your email? Or when you go to the internet, is your browser taking so long to load that it seems like the worldwide wait? I'm Luke Ford, CEO of My Computer Works. We help people just like you with computer problems you can't fix. With one easy call, we can help you get your computer working the way you want it, speeding it back up, making sure you can send and receive emails, and making the internet fun again. You'll speak to a U.S.-based technician who knows what they're doing, who can usually fix your computer on the very first call. If your computer's been slowing down, you can't get your email to work, your internet's taking forever, or if you're not sure what's wrong, but your computer's just not working the way you want it, call My Computer Works, and we'll help you fast.
Call My Computer Works right now, toll-free, 888-629-9618. Tell them Peter B. sent you, 888-629-9618. One more time, 888-629-9618.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. The bad news keeps coming. CBS News correspondent Anthony Mason reports several big companies announced big layoffs today.
Caterpillar cut the deepest, slashing 20,000 jobs, 18% of its workforce. The Peoria-based equipment company, which did $51 billion in business last year, expects to do only $40 billion this year.
We will see the slowest global economic growth in more than 60 years.
Pharmaceuticals giant Pfizer will cut 19,000 jobs as it merges with Wyatt. Sprint Nextel will cut 8,000, Home Depot 7,000. The job losses are now coming from every corner of the economy.
But business is booming at Netflix. The DVD rental service says fourth quarter profits jumped 45% as more people turn to movies at home as an inexpensive form of entertainment. Tim Geithner was confirmed by the Senate late today and quickly sworn in as Secretary of the Treasury.
Treasury's tradition is to defend the integrity of policy, to respect the constraints imposed by limited resources, and to limit government intervention to where it is essential to protect our financial system and to improve the lives of the American people.
President Obama attended the ceremony. He said the economy is in dangerous jeopardy and we can't waste a day. Earlier
today, I'm announcing the first steps on our journey toward energy independence.
Mr. Obama reversed another Bush administration policy, making it easier for California and other states to impose strict limits on auto emissions, and he ordered new federal rules to require more fuel-efficient cars and trucks. CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman reports octuplets were born today in the Los Angeles suburb of Bellflower.
Even the doctors were surprised.
At the time, we thought there were seven.
The eight babies, six boys and two girls, are all being watched closely. They weigh anywhere from 1.8 pounds to 3.4 pounds. Dr. Karen Maples is optimistic.
Eight newborns are in stable condition, and they're doing quite well.
Dr. Harold Henry says the delivery went smoothly.
They were all screaming and kicking around very vigorously.
The first 72 hours are considered the most critical. Steve Futterman, CBS News, Los Angeles.
Vanessa Bliss wishes she'd done something. Her 93-year-old neighbor in Bay City, Michigan, froze to death in his home.
I noticed that. I haven't been seeing him sitting inside the window like he normally does, watching TV.
The power company had put a limiter on the electricity flowing into